Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
The NBA Finals opened last night. Of course, for years, this was an exciting time for people here in Los Angeles. The Lakers are one of the league's premier franchises. Just think of the names: Kobe Bryant, Shaquille O'Neal, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Magic Johnson.
Magic hits one from outside.
And Lakers, led by the exuberant Shaquille O'Neal, and
Bryant to Shaq!
But before any of them, there was Elgin Baylor. He was drafted in 1958 by the team, before they were even the L.A. Lakers. They were still the Minneapolis Lakers, named for the lakes of Minnesota. He was the centerpiece of the team when they moved to California. Angelinos loved his freewheeling, acrobatic style.
Now, Baylor, of course, can move inside on you, can shoot from outside. Here he's penetrating, off balance, lets it go, and it's good.
Elgin Baylor took the Lakers to the finals 7 times, though he just could never get past those pesky Boston Celtics. The 83-year-old has now written a book. It's called Hang Time. It's a story about basketball, for sure, but it's also about racism. And it's about when an athlete should or should not protest. Such a relevant question in sports today. I sat with Baylor the other day in his living room in his Beverly Hills home, and he remembered first falling in love with basketball. He was a kid in segregated Washington, D.C., and to find an actual basketball hoop, he would sometimes have to sneak onto white-only courts at night.
A playground and park was white-only, and the park had, the white park, had a swimming pool, a tennis court, a football field, had everything. And there was a park adjacent to it where, I guess you say anybody can go, public park. And it didn't have anything over it. It didn't even have benches.
Now, the most shocking story in the book may have involved Elgin Baylor's older sister, Columbia. The teenager was outside in D.C. when a white girl spit on her and called her the N-word.
Nigga!
Columbia slapped the girl and then went home. And then the police came to the Baylor's house to arrest Columbia. Her father refused. And the cop said, well, then you punish her right now. And so he did. He used a strap to beat his daughter in front of a young Elgin. Elgin Baylor still struggles to talk about that today. His wife, Elaine, was sitting with us.
So you can imagine how she was. It was just howling and screaming. Elgin doesn't like to remember it because it's just so intensely emotional.
Yeah, I never, you know, think about it because most time I do, you know, I start crying and think, you know. For me, I didn't think she did anything wrong. And I was just wondering why my dad punish her.
As angry as you were at your father to see him hurt your sister like that, do you ever wonder if it came from him wanting to protect her and not let her go off with the police?
I really don't know. I just know that for years, just always disliked my dad. Hated my dad for that, you know.
Well, not long after your pro career started, you said there was a game in Charleston, West Virginia. And on that night, you thought back to that experience watching the police treat your dad like that, because you and several teammates were told you couldn't stay in a hotel in Charleston because of the color of your skin.
Right.
And you made a decision to sit out the game.
Mm-hmm.
How hard was it to decide that you were going to sit out the game in protest?
It wasn't hard at all. And not being big-headed or anything like that. first thing I said, you know, I was really hurt, you know, by that. And I was thought about it. And I said, you know, it's like, hey, I'm not going to go out there. You know, we're not like some animals, you know, the circus or something, and then go out there and put the show on for them. So I said, you know, I'm just not going to play. Then I thought about it. I'm the captain of the team. What are they going to do to me? What are they going to do?
A lot of people in the community were furious at you for not playing that night.
Oh, absolutely. And then the next day, the media, you know, at the hotel, they're down in the lobby waiting for you to come down so they can, you know. Interview. That'd be quite a thing, yeah.
From the newspaper at that time, they said the big colored boy was more interested in eating than playing the game.
Now, can you believe that? Yeah.
Elgin Baylor went on to play 14 years for the Lakers. He then spent some time as a coach and also as a broadcaster. He finished his career confronting racism again. He was working as general manager for the Los Angeles Clippers and its owner, Donald Sterling. Sterling became infamous in 2014 when audio tapes revealing his racism went public.
Don't come to my games. Don't bring black people and don't come.
Do you know that you have a whole team that's black that plays for you?
Do I know? I support them and give them food and clothes and cars and houses. Who gives it to them? Does someone else give it to them?
So Donald Sterling was banned from the NBA for making those comments. But before all of that, Elgin Baylor worked alongside Sterling for 22 years through 2008. Even though he knew his boss was a racist, he stuck it out. Do you have any regrets?
Well, now, if you think about it, yeah, a lot of regrets working with Donald. But think about it, you know, you're married, you have family and things like that. So you have to have a job.
I was really struck by what you said about Charleston. And one reason you sat out in that game so many years ago was, you know, you were not a circus animal. Mm-hmm. And Donald Sterling has sort of been seen as that. I mean, treating black players like circus animals. And he's made comments that really suggest that. And, you know, it hurt a lot of people.
Donald, you know, I try to stay away from it as much as I could. Because, you know, it's always something negative when you would walk in and talk to him. Even with the player was telling me how bad this player was. You know, damn thing about basketball. And certain players, he didn't want to pay him that kind of money.
And he would say because of their race. I mean, he would be open about that.
Well, he raced them because he said he'd rather have black players than white players.
Plantation mentality.
Yeah, but I said, you know, we care. You know, you're trying to get the best players you can. I don't care what color they are.
When you said he had a plantation mentality and you told him that, what did you mean by that?
I'm calling him a racist. But, you know, he didn't care.
But if you face this today, given that so many athletes and people in sports are now publicly protesting, do you think you might have felt more empowered today to quit and say, you know, I'm just not going to work for a racist?
Of course. Yeah, I would think so.
Elgin Baylor likes to keep the focus on his playing days, and so apparently do the LA Lakers. They have honored him with a statue outside the Staples Center where the Lakers play. He's right alongside Shaq and Magic and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. The statue was unveiled in April.
Here's Elgin Baylor driving the baseline on the left side, getting by Russell, and then the ball comes out.
Elgin Baylor's new book is called Hang Time.
Walls, floors, even the hood of a car, slathered in slurs.
This was a cowardly act by cowardly people.
N-words painted over and over again. Nigga! Sometimes with remarks like, leave, we don't want you here, at the Level Up Auto Detail Shop on Elmore.
It could have been worse, but this is totally unnecessary.
Adding insult to injury, shop owner Damian Wyatt says the place had been ransacked when he walked in this morning. No signs of forced entry, and the surveillance recording system was missing, along with a white Infiniti and some of Wyatt's electronics.
If you were going to rob me, then why do all of this? And if you hated me that bad, then why not completely destroy the place?
The answer may lie closer to home than Wyatt would like to think. In the front lobby, a hateful message Wyatt believes alludes to his interracial marriage.
And they put N-word lover on the door, referencing my wife. So this definitely feels like somebody that at least knows about us.
Knowing what these slurs mean and having to explain it to his two young boys, Wyatt says that's what hurts the most.
They don't see color like that. They haven't been brought up like that. And to have somebody force us to have this conversation with them because of this is, that's angering.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Thursday, June 7, 2018. So I have been told. This is our weekly forum on neutralizing workplace racism. Happy birthday, Prince. Weekly forum, neutralizing workplace racism. If we have any black entrepreneurs, would be grand. In fact, not just that it would be grand, but I would really appreciate if we have any black entrepreneurs, dial in the number 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate, but particularly if you're a so-called self-employed black person, non-white person, dial in. That last clip right there reminded me once again, I've said this many times over the years, and particularly with workplace racism. If you are self-employed and a black person, because I hear so many black people who I've concluded they must be confused about white supremacy racism, what it is and how it works, particularly about how it works in labor, who say that, you know, the problem, we shouldn't be asking whites for jobs, we can work for ourselves, that'll solve black people's problems. Not saying not to do that, and not even saying that that's not something that is constructive to do, but you are extraordinarily confused if you think a black person anywhere in the known universe, as long as the system of white supremacy exists, can open a business for themselves, in quotes, and that's somehow going to eliminate their problems with white supremacy. You are extraordinarily confused, mistaken, and setting yourself up for astronomical disappointment. I try to state that as often as I can because it seems like that idea, that notion gets a lot of traction, that all we need to do is go in and quit and storm out of these white folks' office or wherever you happen to work at and then go start a business for yourself and all of your labor problems will be corrected forever. Hogwash. If we have black entrepreneurs, dial in and let us know. If we have any black entrepreneurs that can truthfully say, oh yeah, I sure is sad to hear about my man's business and they trashed it. Terrible. Cowbell even. Terrible to hear about, but I don't have any problems like that. I'm an entrepreneur and things are great. I don't even talk to whites to run my business. If you can truthfully say that, dial in. Or if you just want to be honest, if you're self-employed, to, hey, this has been my experience. Racism is still there. These are ways that I'm able to mitigate, or it makes my labor experience better because I'm quote unquote self-employed. But if you're willing to tell the truth about that, that would be great. We've had some black entrepreneurs do that over the years. I think that's always important. As always, if we have folks who have any issues, problems that they would like codified suggestions on how to resolve their problems without creating any new problems, definitely dial in the number 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Certainly you can email if you have an issue. If you're not able to dial in, the email untiljustice@gmail.com, untiljustice@gmail.com. And we can read your commentary on the air. If you have your own situation, that's fine. Or if you have, you know, commentary or suggestion about what's been discussed on the air, you can email and we will share your commentary live on the air. Before I get to some of the folks who wrote in and our callers as well, that first audio segment that you heard talking about Elgin Baylor, basketball great, think he's in the Hall of Fame, worked with the LA Clippers. Man, They mentioned Donald Sterling. I knew Donald Sterling was going to come up. I'm, you know, have some familiarity with Elgin Baylor and his career. Unfortunately, his career with the LA Clippers. I was so hoping. I knew they were going to quote from Donald Sterling, the infamous, back in 2014. We talked about that on the Cavs. I was hoping that they were going to play the segment when Donald Sterling, after the audio tape had leaked and everything, and everybody was talking about, oh, he's terrible, he's a racist, I can't believe it, we got to throw him out of the league. When he did that interview on CNN, and he said, before he got on Magic, did that coon Magic Johnson run around and spread, before he got into all that, when he started off and he said, my grandfather, he was acting like he was going to cry. It's like, my granddaughter, she was at school, and they gave out snacks, and the little girl said, oh, you don't get any candy because we don't give candy to racists. And he was so hard on me. That's the moment that sticks in my mind most from that incident. Like, I cracked up laughing, like the performance of racist man. Woo! Anyway, they disappointed me. They didn't play that segment. That segment on Elgin Baylor, wow. So many things came to mind. I got the book immediately. That might be coming on the book club. I have a affinity for biographies. We have read many of them on the Cavs. We might be reading Elgin Baylor's autobiography down the road. Just all of that. The portion where he talked about what happened to his sister and a race soldier with a badge coming and forcing his attempted father to beat his young sister in front, you know, the whole family to watch this go down. Wow. Even reminded me of the recent conversation that we had about, you know, how our children feel about black parents in a system of white supremacy. That has nothing to do with workplace racism, so we'll have to table that for later. The other portion of it that did have to do with workplace racism, wow. Either aspect of it, folks coming at him and saying, wow, Agent Bailey, Mr. Baylor, you worked with Donald Sterling for all these years and called him a racist and everything. Why'd you continue to work there? System of racism, white supremacy. Best answer, shortest answer, in my opinion. And even if he had left, let's say, fine, Donald Sterling, you're racist. Not going to work for you. You plantation over. Okay, fine. You get another job. Are you not going to be working directly, indirectly for racist white supremacists? Even if you get another, even if you're quote unquote self-employed, the portion where he talked about when he was actually playing basketball when he was younger in his life. And he said they went to get a hotel. I believe they went to Charleston, West Virginia, and they couldn't get a hotel, so he decided not to play. United Independent didn't sound like he had a committee, talked to a whole lot of people, just made a decision, and then thinking about the consequences, am I willing to accept them? Yes. We do a lot of the same things, trying to be codified about it, think so that you can solve problems without creating new problems. But wow, made me think of quite a bit, that segment on Elgin Baylor. His book, again, is called Hang Time. With all that out of the way, I'll give my quick reminder and then I'll read one of the emails. I'll try and get the rest of them in as we proceed with the broadcast. But my reminder, this broadcast is not for spectators. I realize it's summer and a lot of the great television viewing is done. You have to wait till summer's over, right, for the autumn. You will have to entertain yourself another way. This broadcast is not intended as entertainment. This is intended for victims of white supremacy, black people, to exchange counter-racist suggestions on ways that we can solve problems and neutralize the terrorism we experience in the workplace. If you have had a job, I'm pretty certain you have experienced some form of workplace racism, even if you didn't recognize it at the time. I think it's always helpful for us to share. We can pick out patterns, different things that whites do to us in the workplace to cause us problems. We can always swap strategies if we figure out ways to effectively neutralize some of the racist offenses without causing any new problems. That is always helpful, always needed. And again, just we have younger people that are listening to the program who don't have an extensive, you know, work history. They and I and others always appreciate hearing the types of things that we should be on the lookout for, things that could potentially happen to us in the workplace, and just recognizing what a serious problem this is, white supremacy in general, and then specifically things that we deal with in the area of labor. So do not spectate, dial in. Major problem of white supremacy, racism. We have victims of white supremacy or are spectating. We should be much more active with our understanding of counter-racist logic. That's it. First person who wrote in commentary. It's from a non-white female. She writes, I can only laugh at this point because I know these white supremacists I work with are beneath me. My workplace experiences this week were chaotic. Sorry. One of my black coworkers abruptly put in 1 day notice of quitting. On the day she quit, my white female immediately came after me with a whole bunch of white supremacist tactics. She ran over to me to start micromanaging me. She, for some reason, had to review my work. She then goes to her desk, calls me, and tells me she will be monitoring me. I contacted a potential client. When the phone call went over 5 minutes, I would say 5 minutes and 1 second. She interrupts the call and starts barking at me. Apparently, she was criticizing me, telling me I was taking too long, I'm doing everything wrong, just nitpicking me. She purposely hangs up my call and then asked me why I hung up on the client. Now, I said allegedly because I don't understand barking, and the client I was dealing with emailed me this information. I didn't respond to my boss, by the way. Her next tactic was that she sent the head of the department, who is black, after me with the same tactics. He starts micromanaging, interrupting my calls, just repeating everything that she did. The black supervisor is higher than this white lady, in title, I would add, but the white lady is running the show. He takes orders from her. It really shows you how much power they have. That's why it is white supremacy. No other name. The next day, it was complete silence. I didn't get attacked once. My white boss was punishing me because the other black woman quit. My white manager is married to a black man, insert cowbell. I have to mention it. She tries to control my emotions, and when I don't break, she tries harder. If the person who wrote this is listening, if you have more detail, that would be appreciated in terms of, like, what do you mean when she says she's trying to control your emotions? What's she doing? Like, if you have specific incidents or specific examples, I think that's important if we could get a little more detailed if you're listening live. Continuing, she's constantly discouraging me from taking time off. She tries to tell me where to go for lunch, tries to force me to go to the workplace luncheon. The tactic she uses is threatening with insubordination, although I was already cleared by her to take PTO, etc. Pay time off. When I do take pay time off, I come back with many emails nitpicking me and trying to place the blame on me for things my white male employees have clearly done wrong. This lady has people following me around, all around the building. During lunch, I went down a few flights to the cafe and started speaking to a black male I am friends with. She ran down and started yelling and monitoring for me and motioning for me to go back to our floor. I told her I was on lunch and walked away. I think myself and a few other black and non-white coworkers have the same complaint, but they attribute her behavior to personality and ignorance. In my head, I say it's because she's a nasty racist. These are the same coworkers who told me she caused another black male employee to go postal. He broke the computers and started acting on his anger. He was actually arrested. Wow. Yet my black and non-white coworkers think she's just ignorant. End of report. If the person who submitted this, if you are listening live, ma'am, and if you have the time and ability, if you could give us maybe a little more detail on what do you mean when you say she's trying to control your emotions? It sounds like that's exactly what she did with this black male that you mentioned at the end. If it got to the point where he got so angry that he was breaking computers and had to be arrested, that's why I say consistently, you know, whatever opinion that you have about the cows, Gus, or, you know, whatever you hear on workplace racism, you might listen and say, you know, this is some nonsense. Like, I'm not going to implement any of these suggestions at all. Might be. However, one thing that I say that I do not think is nonsense, and really, this is the most important aspect of workplace racism, got to. We have got to control our emotions. It doesn't mean that you ignore emotions. It doesn't mean that you never get upset. It doesn't mean that you're not supposed to be angry about what's being done to us. But it does mean I am not going to let my emotions override me using logic. When Mr. Fuller says consistently solving problems without creating new problems, just getting angry and reacting, responding on that anger generally is not going to solve problems without creating new problems, especially in the workplace. Racists, they know how to handle. It's not just that they know how to handle. They know how to destroy black people who get angry and are not using logic. They're just going with their emotion. They know how to destroy them and to have fun doing it. With this white, and particularly if this white woman is not your supervisor, we talk so much about the monitoring and just understanding that you're under surveillance on the job. If she's, you know, upset about whatever happened to another non-white person quit, she's probably terrorizing that person too. And she's taking it out on you or sending people to follow you or even, you know, getting this black person who's supposed to be a manager to follow you. Understanding that, I think we talked about that a lot this spring in terms of being on the job, understanding that you are under surveillance, not being surprised about that, stunned about that, depending on, you know, what's happening, you can take different routes. But I mean, just understanding that is what white supremacy is. Everybody in the company might be watching you and having surveillance cameras on you the whole time. In fact, you should be thinking that way. That's what we talked about consistently so that you're not surprised, because this sort of thing is so routine, predictable in the system. The PTO, we talked about that when people whites on the job trying to micromanage those sorts of incidents when you're trying to get time off, PTO. That's why I say consistently as well, policy and procedure. It seems like this person had already done everything that they needed to take their PTO when they wanted to, had it scheduled. So it's no need to get emotional and respond when this person is coming. It seems like what she's doing is trying to provoke a response so that then she can go get this black person who is the alleged supervisor. Oh yeah, she was nasty and rude and, you know, probably broke 15 violations and that sort of thing, so that she can get you in trouble, where it's she's just instigating, practicing white terrorism on the job. It's considered, we've heard so many different patterns of this over the years. Again, that's why I said I think it's great to just to know so that you're not surprised. You're not like these other non-white people on the job thinking that she's ignorant or confused or whatever it is. I know exactly what this is. This is a race soldier, and I got my code about how I'm going to neutralize her effort. Have other emails to read, but we'll share those as we proceed. The number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. If we have any, she didn't ask for suggestions per se, but if folks have suggestions on the first email that we read, that would be grand. If you have your own situation that you would like to address, that would be grand as well. We'll get to the first few folks who dialed in with a hand up. If you dialed in, you have a hand up, line should be open. Proceed. We nab any of the folks who have a hand up yet?
I don't have a whole lot to say about the first email. She really didn't ask for any suggestions or anything, but I would say that the behavior of the white person. And I guess I can also say the strategy of the white person, because they do have strategies, is normal in of course, in a negative way. It takes place on just about all employment that non-white people are involved in, especially a white female is typical of a white female who probably wouldn't have that type of behavior around a white male, but feel quite strength-wise to do that to a non-white person, especially a non-white black female. Examples like that are ones that I would like for black female collectives to pay attention to when it comes to where white females have this false extension to join with them, to understand, well, that's white females' real behavior. That's just like their male parts, as far as that's concerned. And that's all I have to say on that particular email. Thank you.
Appreciate that, retired firefighter, racist man, racist woman. Certainly keep that in mind on the job.
And I did have.
See there? Go ahead, Mr. Retired Firefighter.
I did have a the Elgin Baylor clip reminded me of a incident in history in sports, professional sports, which is a workplace that is very seldom talked about. And I think I know why, because they don't want to give the present athletes any ideas. Back in the, I think, the mid-1960s, I may have brought this up before on the program, the mid-1960s, when the NFL was actually split between two leagues, the NFL, and there was a league that was separate that was called the American Football League, AFL. They had their own All-Star game, and if anybody online didn't know on how what an All-Star game is that the league would pick the best players from the teams, and they would divide it up into halves, and they would play each other with the idea mind of drawing a lot of people in to see their favorite football player in this case. And that sort of thing. So anyway, but really, other than the football field, those guys, you know, they were friends, you know, indistinctive of what team they may be on. And so when they were out of practice, both teams, they the black males especially hung together. It was in the city of New Orleans at the time. They started travel to the many different places and sites that's in New Orleans that people can go to, like the restaurants, some of the clubs. And at each one, they were met with higher and higher levels of hostility, even to the standpoint to whereas they were threatened with death if you tried to enter my facility. And in turn, as a reaction, this is guys on both teams. They put their experiences together, and they decided to not play in the All-Star game. Refusal to play in the All-Star. We're not talking about going to a knee. They refused to play in the game itself. In turn, that started a situation to where, as you know, white people, what I've heard before from Mr. Fuller and others, that white people have all kinds of connections. That person may be a mayor in New York, but yet he knows somebody way another side of the world, that sort of thing. But anyway, things started, happening to whereas they actually things started moving to whereas it actually went to the politics of New Orleans itself at the time, and things started happening from them refusing to play in that game. But it was just something, a somewhat case that that is relevant to what is going on today. That was something that was done, you know, way back in the mid 1960s of these guys who took the bold move to, well, I'm not going to play in a place where I'm not treated as a person and respected. And that's all I have to say right now. Thank you.
Appreciate that. Retired firefighter. Might be interesting to ask Walter Beach about that. That's around the same period that he was playing football, to see if he remembers that.
I'm pretty sure he would know.
I suspect he would as well. He was on the program the end of 2017. For folks who recall, he had a few thoughts to say about his experience with workplace racism as a professional football player as well. And even before I proceed, the time that retired firefighter is talking about, that era, 1960s, when Walter Beach was playing, when Elgin Baylor was playing for the Lakers, they were not making the types of salaries that you're seeing now, where you've got, you know, players, professional athletes making a quarter of $1 billion on there. They were not making anything close to that, nor was there any thought that you could make that type of money, even close to that type of money at that period of time. So, I guess it depends on how you look at it, but I mean, for someone like Elgin Baylor, this is not someone who was making $300 million a season while he was with the Lakers. So just in my view, that's something that should be factored in when we're talking about, you know, what his decisions either to stay working with the Clippers with Donald Sterling or whether he sat out a game in the 1960s because they did not allow Negros to stay in the hotel room. Other folks that we have not heard from, if you have commentary on what's been discussed so far, if you have your own situation, feel free.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, this is Dresa Mena, and I'm calling just to report just an update on my work workplace racism. So the incident with the guy that was stalking me outside of the building.
Draptomania, are you with us? Not hearing you at all. Draptomania, are you with us? Seems you may have been dropped. I'm not sure if you're having difficulties with your line or what have you, but we're not hearing you at all, Draptomania. Not hearing you at all. If you want to hang up, dial back in, we'll keep an eye out for you on the switchboard and bring you back on then. While we are waiting for Draptomania, whatever audio issues she was having, tech issues, other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, if you have commentary you would like to share, line should be open. Proceed.
Hi, Gus.
Stacy in the UK coming in early. I guess it's 1:42 a.m. Friday morning.
1:43, Gus.
Yes, ma'am.
Hello to you and to the other callers and listeners. Just because Dr. Mainly dropped off. The retired firefighter's comments in relation to the email, I was about to say something very similar, actually. I'd be interested from the person who emailed in if they have an opinion that white females, potentially black males, are even more vicious when they do have a so-called non-white partner at home. My experience is that I've had managers who, white females, who have black partners, and that they're equally as vicious, if not worse, than racists who don't have a white partner at home. But I have no scientific evidence to support that. It's just opinion. You talked about entrepreneurship and the role it has to play, I do think it is not a cure for racism, but I do think it is a way of minimizing the impact. Certainly my view at the moment is that regardless of whether anybody's working, I think we should all try and do something entrepreneurial outside of our paid employment, just as a backstop, because I don't know that it's the wisest thing to be totally reliant on one source of income these days. And I would minimize, keep it very quiet, that you have anything happening, certainly in terms of your own business. Just keep that to yourself. Don't share that with other people that you work with in any paid employment that you might have. And on that point, I recommend a book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, as potential book for the book club in the future. I won't go into it now, but whether it's that you're thinking of being an entrepreneur or just a better understanding of finances, I think it would just be a good one for the book club. And if it doesn't get read, then recommend people reading it nonetheless on their own time. And last week or the week before, I think there was somebody who called in about recommending 48 Laws of Power to a colleague, and they shared that with other people in the workplace and they were taken aback by that. My daughter has a mentor, and it is a white male. He is a partner in one of the big financial institutions. And very early on when he started mentoring her, he recommended she read The Art of War by Sun Tzu. So these books do have a place in certainly how the workplace is run. And I mean, that book wasn't written for the workplace, but it's certainly used as business strategy. So I thought I'd share that anyway. And just on the mentoring side of things, she has several, I guess this is my recommendation as a parent to other non-white parents. She has several mentors, both white, non-white, male and female. And I guess if I could go back to my younger days, I would employ some of the strategies that she has. Certainly, I've always encouraged her and supported her. And I guess she's taken any knowledge that I've given her and maximized it. So she doesn't have one mentor. She will have several mentors, and they all provide something different for her. And I guess she's very, very good at networking, because she seems to have very senior people who will support her. I do think it's easier as a young person, if you're non-white in particular, to get a mentor and mentors who have, I guess, a lot to offer in terms of their understanding of the workplace and how to maneuver. But yeah, I mean, now, to be honest with you, I'm pretty certain he gets something out of, or all of her mentors get something out of mentoring her. Whether it's just that it's good on their CV to be mentoring a non-white young person, and perhaps more. And I don't say that in terms of anything inappropriate, but I do think he's benefited from her. This one mentor in particular benefited from her because of her interest in tech, and he then managed to get a new position in something related to tech in the organization that he works for. And I'm sure it's off the back of just prying her for knowledge, but nonetheless, she gets a lot out of that relationship. I've got other updates, Gus, but I'll mute my line because I've realized I'm speaking for a while. But yeah, I guess that last commentary was for parents who have young people. As I said, I think it is easier to get mentors if you're a young person. And maybe it's just to have a strategy for how you go about acquiring mentors and what role they play. And I certainly wasn't that savvy when I was younger. I'm not that savvy now. But yeah, I'll mute my line there, Gus.
Appreciate that, Stacey, in the UK. The book again, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, What the Rich Teach Their Kids About Money That the Poor and Middle Class Do Not. Robert T. Kiyosaki, K-I-Y-O-S-A-K-I. If you want a book to read, reading is more important than watching television. Since this is workplace racism and it is on topic, does anybody else have comments here? This is what I say about patterns, right? Has anyone else? We had Stacy, who is all the way other side of the planet, to say that she's seen the same pattern that the female caller who wrote in about the race soldier, white woman who's married to a black male. And she said she felt she was especially hostile and terroristic in the workplace because she has this black male partner that I don't know if she's advertising her interracial status or what have you. But any other folks, have they seen that pattern in the workplace? Just toss that question out to see what folks think. I believe Draptomania is back with us. Did you want to try again? I think we have you back with us. You want to give it one more chance?
Yes, I do apologize for that. I've been having some issues with my computer. I suspect that the white people have been trying to hack into my computer. I had some issues with this morning when I came home from work. My computer was down, and it was saying that somebody was trying to hack into the Wi-Fi. I have not been able to contact you guys through via the Vote line at all. Anytime I call lately, I am not able to be heard. So thank God I have this alternative phone that I'm able to call in on. I was calling to give you guys an update in regards to my workplace incident. The non-white female that I was having an issue with, you know, we worked like I took the suggestions. You know, I didn't, hold any type of animosity or hostility towards her. And last night, on Wednesday nights, we usually have two supervisors in, and it's another non-black female. So what she ended up doing, she told, because the other non-white female is her supervisor. So she told her about the incident with the guy, you know, that was sitting down in front of the building. That supervisor then took that information because, you know, she took it seriously. You know, she then took that information. She forwarded it over to management, all the other managers. When she forwarded this information over, she was able to get a response. Whereas the other manager, she wasn't able to get any response due to this incident. So, and I also took the pictures that I took of the guy, and I texted them over to her because she asked him to. And she then took those pictures, and she forwarded it over to the managers. And what happened was, you know, she said, well, you know, just like I was saying, well, you know, if there was an issue, they can always run the plates or whatever to make sure if this guy works here or what have you, they can just easily investigate and find out what this is. So what I was told is that these guys, what they've been allowing is the people at this one company, I guess, that is up the street from us, they're not allowed to smoke on their premises. So what they do is they ride down and they smoke around there. We allow them to smoke, like, I guess, on the edge of our premise or whatever. So I was able to find out, get some resolution as to who this guy was, you know what I mean?
because for the last 2 weeks or so, you know, I wasn't able to know who this person was that was sitting out there. And like you guys were telling me, you know, when it comes down to your safety, you should always just cover your tracks no matter what. So at least we got that straight. And but the good thing about me bringing all of this up is that I was able to address the issue that, you know, when I get off the bus at night, there is no one. It's really like a wooded area. We're isolated. We're close to a highway. So if something was to happen, like somebody could easily like do whatever they were going to do, and then you can be off into another state or what have you. So they said that what they would do, the resolution is that they would probably try to have a manager come down to meet me at night to at least walk me into the building. And I also used your the suggestion of what the how if you make it seem like it's a company issue, you know, and how it's not just unsafe for me, but it's unsafe for the other employers in the company, because there's other employees that get off of work at 10 o'clock at night, and it's dark out and it's not lit in that area. So I suggested maybe they can get more cameras and maybe get more lighting out in that area, because anything can happen. So I'm just happy that I was able to get answers today. I'm glad that I didn't, you know, hold any type of animosity, because it seems as if, from based on what I've been hearing, you know, she's been kind of going through, you know, even though she's management, she's been being treated, you know, there's some things that's been going on with her also, and the way she's been being treated by these white management and bosses also. Even though they have us in these positions, it doesn't mean that, like, you know, they don't have to go through challenges for being supervisors and management also. They have to take a lot of flack also. So she was saying that she wasn't even able to get any of her issues addressed by management. So I'm just happy that I was able to get some resolution. I'm just wanted to report back to you guys, and it's been very helpful, because you know, I'm glad I'm not reacting, because everything I have heard thus far as far as you know, how they pit us to try to act up. And, you know, we act up on these jobs, and then they have a way of neutralizing us. So, you know, it's I think this is a healthy forum for me to be able to come to. And I have like-minded individuals, victims like myself, that we can put some resolution to how we can deal with these situations in a constructive manner. And that was the main thing that kept going through my mind, Gus. It's like, how can I, like, I kept repeating this. It was like you and Mr. Fuller was in my head, and Dr. Francis Chris Wilson. Well, how can I deal with this situation in a constructive manner, in a constructive manner? And that's what kept running through my mind. And I'll mute my line. Thank you, Gus.
All right on. I'm glad to hear it moved in a constructive direction since, I guess, the last time that we spoke with you. That, I guess I'm going to say, that's Dr. Welsing moment. If this white stalker individual was out smoking cigarettes, I don't know if you saw him smoking or if he's smoking in any of your the photographs that you took, that would not that wouldn't necessarily appease me. If it's just, this is some random white individual, racist from down the road, who is coming to our facility to light up a cigarette or what have you, like, okay. One, it seems like you could do that in your car. Like, I don't know why you have to drive down the road to smoke. I hate smokers. I've always hated smokers. I think one of the first jobs that I had, all of the smokers were basically suspected racists, and they would just sit outside and gossip about black people. They were just terrorists. So that's the association that I have with smokers on the job, is directly to racists. I know there are a lot of black people that smoke on the job too, but that's not the people that I've been around in my life. I don't know why you couldn't just get in the car and do that. I don't know why you have to drive like a block or a mile, however far down the road, to go to a whole different facility.
Yeah, because they say they don't allow them to do the smoke on the premises at all. So they ride down the street to smoke down the street. That was the explanation that was given to me. Yeah.
Wow. tobacco, nicotine. Some idiot does say sobriety would be best, and I include cigarettes in that. But anyway, that would not make me feel any better at all. It's just some nicotine addict that's down here stalking us. Like, you know, we're still at square one in terms of how we're going to deal with the problem. But if they're going to get the cameras and have somebody to come to escort you down, phenomenal. I definitely agree. I think Mr. Fuller makes that suggestion all the time about, you know, even with the safety thing, that's a little different because I definitely would not have a problem and would encourage people, in fact, to say, hey, this is a safety issue. If you do not feel safe, that's it. And in most job situations, if it's a safety issue and you're not safe, that should be enough to get things moving to deal with the problem. But it's not a company situation. This is unsafe for all of us. I'm not the only person that works late and has to go to their car either late at night or very early in the morning when it might not be totally light yet. And we want to make sure that everyone who comes here to work feels safe as they are coming to work, leaving. I would think every employer would want his employees to feel safe while they are on the job. So outstanding. I would still be real vigilant about things and what have you. And even the tackiness in that it had to take this long to get information to find out, oh yeah, this is, you know, such and such from down. I mean, they could have done that in the first 5 minutes to get that taken care of so you could be more informed. And, you know, I mean, it's not that difficult to find out that sort of information. That kind of tackiness just kind of further showed, particularly if you contrast that with some of the other times where whites have had a problem, where they felt like somebody said something to them on the way to the car or they didn't feel safe. I think our caller down in Florida had talked about that. They called the police immediately and even tried to get him to escort this white woman to the car when she didn't feel safe. I just don't see that sort of urgency when it's a black man. We've had a number of black people, males and females, on this call who've reported safety issues. And it's the same sort of lackadaisical, are you sure? Well, all right. Well, say do not slouch on your safety at all. If you have to go and agitate everyone, do so. Take safety very, very, very seriously on the job or anywhere in the system of white supremacy. I'm glad that you took it up, and it seems like, you know, things are moving in the correct direction. Just stay alert. Keep that phone handy. Keep your if you got a tactical pen or any other weaponry, keep it handy and stay on alert. That'd be my suggestion.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, ma'am. Context of white supremacy. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Other folks we have not heard from at all. If you have commentary, line should be open. Proceed. Yes, sir.
Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners, and callers. I've been meaning to share a couple of behaviors or gestures, I guess I can start out with. There was one time where, there was one time when I was walking to do my courier, my pickup for envelopes. And I do my usual codified, morning, good morning to the coworkers, black people, white people, non-white, or, you know, whatever. And it was a particular white coworker, like she did like a wave, but it looked like a Nazi salute. Okay. Like how she held up her hand. That's not a particular normal wave. So if you can envision what they call a Nazi salute, where I think Richard Spencer and his cronies were, accused of doing, around the Trump campaign, that he was calling it a Roman salute or something like that. But it's where you stick your hand up in the air and it's like a firm point where you're sticking your hand up. So she did that as like a wave. my second one is there was like there was the meeting that happened last Friday, and I did not get featured in the circuit rider. I don't know, you know, what happened or whatever, but I think more details are going to come out about it. But I think another act of racism was practiced by the white woman that's been presiding over the meetings. The reason I say that was I just met my 7 years, and most of those years I know I've been calling on the line, maybe about 4 or 5 of them. So it was my seventh year milestone where they will mention these things in a meeting. And so, see, this is racist right here. You have white people, you have a white woman says, well, you know, for our milestones this morning, we have this person that's been here for 6 years, this person been here for 3 or 2 years, and she named about 2 other white people. Okay, then she gets to me. Okay, so this is the context. Now I'm standing right in front of this person, like brought out in the open. Okay, and she can see me, but she looks up and she says, where's blank? So she says my name, and she turns back and look at me, and she says, oh, how many years have you been here? And I actually answered. I said, well, I'm going to count 7. And everybody starts clapping, like applauding. That definitely was racist. Like just, and she was like smiling with it and grinning with it. Said, how many years have you been here? But she didn't say that to the white folks she was naming, listing off. And she had me last. The next one was there was a black female customer that came in to get a lot of required records for, I guess, maybe it was something she was trying to do about starting her own business maybe or something for her own employment. And the white female, I heard her gossiping with the non-white female that I said that I guess try to make it seem like she's white or whatever, but I think she's confused. And there was another white woman, and they talking about this black female saying that, man, you know, I'm going outside. She spent about like an hour with the customer, you know, trying to print out the required documents for the black female. And we closed at 5 o'clock. So she's saying, I went outside and this person, she's getting in a Cadillac Escalade, and I got to get her the car that I have. It's like oozing with envy and jealousy. Like, how can this person have a criminal record and she has that and I have this? Basically, like what they would call in slang terms, hate them, but ultimately an act of racism, because you're saying that she has to have gotten this nice vehicle by illegitimate means, selling drugs, because that's what they're saying. Hey, there's only one way that she got that was by selling drugs. And I was on the phone and I overheard this. So she mentioned it again, and my black supervisor had pretty much corrected her on that. Like, I mean, you can see what's on the surface. Like, you don't know how she was able to purchase that vehicle. She could have, you know, a job, 2 jobs. She could be getting help or, you know, doing things legitimately. It doesn't mean that she's doing something criminal. So that I think that was the act of black self-respect right there. And my last one, number 4, I think, is that same non-white female, I don't know, mixed or something like that. She made a very, very, I guess you could say, like, scathing type of comment, because I think I started saying that it gives support to racism because she isn't white to practice racism. Like, the black female, the new black female that's been working in front of me, that sits in front of me at a desk, She 2 days in a row, like on Monday and last Friday, she left early last Friday and wasn't there on Monday. So she's been having a problem or a pet peeve about someone tweaking the settings on her office chair. And she already knew who the person was. So she's like, you should just change the settings back. That's really annoying, you know? And I guess because the person is shorter or whatever, which didn't really mean anything. She just wanted the girl to put the settings back. So this person walks through there, all right, and the same white woman is talking to me that pretty much practiced racism. She wanted me to take the Jeep car to the dealership to get the AC fixed. And she's looking up the address on Google. And the context, this all is very important. The non-white female walks through the door, and there's two black people, the non-white, non-black classified female and the white woman. And the black female, you know, she says her name, but she isn't like uncontrollably emotional. She just trying to communicate with her. Like, can you please just put the settings back on my chair? And I could just tell just like the toxicity on her facial expressions, the non-white female. And she says, wow, like I'm just outdone with you. And this is an act of discrimination, a group 3 offense. Like, do you hear that? She started listing off policy and procedure in front of the white woman networking personnel and accusing a black person of discriminating against her because she vertically challenged. Like, that's, you know, that's the way she worded it, because I'm vertically challenged. And she, you know, she was smiling with a grin. But the way I read that, that was very, just very toxic. I wanted to report that on the line. And, you know, this isn't a white person, but, you know, the white person is red, like, yeah, I heard her. Accusing a black person of discrimination, that's just, wow. But that's the only thing that I have right now. And thanks for allowing me to speak.
Indeed. Get your PhD. I don't think anybody here is an expert on white supremacy. If I am impugning anyone's credentials, my apology, but I think we only got victims here. Unless we got some whites on the line, we don't have any experts on racism present. So all of us, it seems, could go to the courthouse down in Florida and learn quite a bit about what it means to be white. Now, the first thing, man, anytime they have a ceremony on your job, you already know, like, the tackiness is about to abound. Let me just be prepared. Maybe I'll say something. Maybe I won't, because they had the one earlier this year where they were, and they, it's always like an introduction. It's supposed to be some sort of group recognition, like, hey, everybody, it's Prince's birthday. Let's give a round of applause. Hey, everybody, Jenny, she's a new employee. She just joined. Let's give her a round of applause. And hey, and then they get to our caller here in Florida. They get to, what's your name again now? Do you work here? What department? How long have you worked? Are you sure you're supposed to be? And it's, wait a minute, I was in the newsletter 3 times this year. Don't you read the newsletter for the job? What do you mean? Don't I? Everybody in here should know my face, my name, what I do, and should have hearty congratulations. Has anybody else in here been in the newsletter 3 times this calendar year? I'm like, I would just hold the newsletter. What do you mean you don't know who I am? You don't know. Money, get out of here. It's tackiness all the way. Isn't that true, sir? Isn't that, you've been in the newsletter, and they did, they had a black female who was a new employee. They didn't even do her the indignity of saying, oh, ma'am, what's your name? Did you just start working? They didn't even acknowledge her. Didn't they? They went around and they talked to white people who weren't even new employees. These were white people who were still working there, and they just wanted to go around because we hadn't seen them a while. So we want to give them a little love, a little shout out for them. Brand new black employee totally ignored her. Isn't that true?
Yes, the same building, same woman who did that same act. Willfully neglected her. And I called it out, their racism. And I think this is definitely a retaliation on that. But I'm not sure. I think she knows that I'm picking that up. I think she's trying to get a some kind of provoked response out of it or something like that.
Patterns, heard that a few times over the 10 years we've been on the program and in the last hour that we've been talking. And again, that's why I say it's important, because I think when you just have this in mind, like, you cannot be, oh, Ted is cool. You know, he never says anything racist. He's all right. He likes the Lakers and everything. He loved Black Panther. He says the Wakandas on his social media, everything. You cannot be thinking that. I don't care, you know, what they're doing on the job. It could be the coolest white woman, the coolest white man, and, you know, they, whatever you think, you know, a white person can do to evidence that they are not racist. Maybe they got Dr. Welsing's book on their desk or whatever. Whatever it is, you should not be stunned. Them practicing racism, whether it's mistreating you, anybody else, any sort of tackiness, and anything like that, just where a black person, for what, even if it's not mistreatment, it's just being ignored. You know that they would not treat a white person like that. If it was a white person, they would know that white person's name. They would know how long that they've worked at the company, what department they're, all of that. They had all that information for all the other employees. They get to the end and it's, oh, now we can't remember the person's name, how long they've been here, anything like that. Not being surprised about it. My feelings are not hurt. I'm not going to need to go home and pout. This is what I expect. Even if the, you know, white person had been my coolest buddy on the job, even then, I'm not surprised. I understand what it means to be white, and I was prepared for that sort of thing. In fact, had my recorder at the ready. That's how prepared I was for this sort of tackiness. And the same thing with this, I think it was to say, it was so many, with the later incident where the white woman, so many white women too, I appreciate that, it's not the man. The white woman, she assumed that the Negro had to have some sort of criminal background, selling crack, opioids, all of the above, to get a Cadillac Escalade. Like, my God, I'm in my little ratty wagon here. And, you know, how did this Negro get Escalade? He must be pushing credit. Standing, and we've heard that on jobs before. That's why we've talked about, I think we've had black people directly where they've said they worked on a job and they, you know, maybe they have more than one vehicle and they normally drive the vehicle that's not as flashy. And then one day they switched up and for whatever reason had to drive the other vehicle that was a Cadillac or whatever. And white, oh my God, this nigga, we are paying him to that consistent, yeah. Which again, just shows the system of racism, white supremacy. You're supposed to be a nigra in terms of what whites expect of you. And it's not going to be, oh wow, this is a fiscally responsible black person who maybe saves their money so that they can afford to buy a luxury or can afford to have more than one car. It's, oh my God, we're supposed to be terrorizing this nigga. How'd they even get one car? We need to fire him right now or find a reason to write him up. Standard operating procedure and the assumption of criminality from the biggest criminal gangsters in the known universe. The last incident, I think people have talked about that before, having people, I know Emmy has talked about it quite a bit, having people who maybe they are not classified as white, but they are not black. And it seems like they are wanting, they're striving to do all that they can to be accepted, classified as white. And a lot of that is going to be nasty comments about other black people, mistreatment of black people, non-white people, that observation about accusing a black person of discrimination about where the chair is positioned, that does sound like something I would expect from a racist to talk, and particularly not just the talking down to, and I think you were saying to do it in kind of a jokey tone to make it seem like it was a joke, but I mean, you can tell the as you, I think toxicity, that was a phrase that was used, standard. I would just make note of that sort of thing. Those type of individuals can be very dangerous on a job. It might be you that they are choosing to mistreat. And that's why I understand with some people, they just say, hey, I have a code and this is how I function in opposition to mistreatment. I function in support of justice on the job, period, regardless of whether it's a white person or a non-white person. I do the same things regardless, because I am opposed to mistreatment, particularly mistreatment of black people, especially mistreatment of me, this specific black person. So I totally understand the logic of that. And I'll ask before we transition to the next person, how do you function with regards to this person? Do you function as though this is someone classified as white, or do you function as though this is a non-white person who's confused?
More so the latter, because I've seen white people definitely categorize her as a non-white. People are calling her different, I guess you can say, titles that would apply to a non-white person. I guess like some people will say Indian, or they say that she looked mixed with this. And she's now I heard her say that she is, I guess, what they call Arabic or Russian or something like that. And she, now this is interesting, like, because I don't know if you remember this, but I said this in one of my incidents where her boyfriend wanted her to be a Mexican, and he wanted to be the border patrolman. That, like, that's that same person. And I noticed she tries to be flirtatious with me at times, but I just try to, like, keep it business, workplace-like. But definitely I don't mistreat her or nothing like that. But I think she tries to do things toward me or say things to me if I don't try to give her some kind of basic attention. But I'd only just say, you know, good morning or whatever, and I just go on about my day. Because I don't know if I shared this one, but just to share it real quick, there was a, like, at my desk, she was sitting next to my desk. She was covering for another employee that was going to lunch. And there was a black female that was doing paperwork. So she says, hey, you know, I want to show you something real quick. And she, you know, she pulls out a cell phone, and she's showing a mugshot of a black person who was arrested for stealing something at a Walmart. She's saying, dang, doesn't she look like this person? And then, you know, now I'm thinking, like, why would she tell this to me? And she's, you know, because I know I come from the east side of town, and we have a Supercenter Walmart over there. And I guess she was trying to get me to provide commentary on how do I see, you know, this store doing on this part of town, and, you know, making, trying to get me to make comments about other black people, like, you know, saying, hey, this could do a lot better over here if we didn't have this kind of activity and this kind of crime. So that was real high level right there for her to do that. But I'm not surprised, because she has stated that, you know, she is with a white person sexually. So I know that has an effect on her mind and her friends, too.
Context of white supremacy. I guess stick by my original assessment. This sounds like a pretty dangerous person that business, as you said, keeping it business. I would be very alert around. Sounds like someone I probably would not want to be alone with either. I know people, we've talked about that code specifically with white women before, but I think under these circumstances, I probably would not want to be any place where it's just her and I. Definitely a good code for the Me Too era, maybe for lots of folks, males and females, to keep that in mind. But if you identify someone like this person sounds, who's dangerous for a lot of reasons, very, very careful. And that's why you need a code, because you're already thinking anything in terms of she could say something like that. Who knows? I'm going to have to be very careful. If you have your recording device, boop, I already have that ready. I practice so that I can access that. I'm going to be real mindful if it looks like we could be trapped or it's just us someplace. And I'll be very precise about what I say to this person. Being codified on the job a lot, and a lot of times saying less is the best option. Again, that's, you know, when I say saying less or being precise, that's not saying that you are being mute around these people, and that's not saying that you have to ignore them, but I'm certainly not going to be just chatty around these folks. I'm going to be very deliberate about what I have to say. No unnecessary verbiage. Much obliged.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
She should be on that image that I had. I don't know if you can see the image so you can see the person for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
She's on that group picture where I wasn't a part of.
Okay.
Toward I believe it's the left part.
Okay. I'm scrolling on my Facebook now so that I can go back to the group image. I'll get a gander. It'd be interesting to see how much melanin content this person has here. Okay, I'm scrolling back. Once I can get a visual, I'll try and share with folks my interpretation about how dark or how light I think this person is. Let's see, while I am scrolling back through, if we had... Oh, got there quicker than I thought. Wow, okay. All right, so you said she's the one on the far left, you said?
Is it, I'm trying to remember what she... I think had on some black pants and a dark blue shirt.
Okay.
Black. A short girl.
Okay. And does she have a tattoo?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Wow. Lots lighter, significantly lighter than I was expecting. Like, wow. She's definitely darker than the other individuals here that I think would be classified as white, but... Woo! She's light enough that I might have to say she's a suspected racist. Like, you said she's a victim. You said you've heard enough that for you she's just a confused victim.
Yes, and I've heard people tell her that she's like a quote unquote person of color, you know, Indian or something.
Hmm. And this might be one too. This is why I've said with pics sometimes you have to see people a lot of time and asking people. Going to be a lot more of this. Again, whites benefit from this always, but hey, now seeing this person in January and seeing this person in June might be two different things. This is Florida, so I suspect you all get, you know, a little more sunshine even in the winter down there, but yeah, that, wow. I don't, and this is another one that can be VGQ as well. I could say, hey, she's just going to be a racist suspect for me. I'm kind of ignorant and I don't like making mistakes. Wow, she's a lot like I thought, so I'll just say she's a racist suspect. He says that she's a confused victim. No problem. We might function the exact same way around this person on the job, just in my mind thinking, ooh, I'm not sure. Maybe some of these white people do think she's white. Him thinking, man, poor victim. No problem there at all. United, independent, and we might even be functioning the same way around this person. And I guess just for folks seeing in my view, this person looks like, well, I would say President Obama, and maybe even could be lighter than President Obama, depending on, you know, when you see him. Sometimes he looks darker as well, but I wouldn't say any darker than President Obama from, you know, the image that I'm seeing here. No darker than President Obama.
And the straightened hair, too, because it's usually like in a puff, like, I can't describe it like a curl puff, but I know she definitely been trying to straighten it. You know, like what you say, striving after that white aesthetic, that white external appeal to look like a white person. Yep, straightening it all the time.
Straighten it out. White is right. Black get back, and all the while wearing all black. The contradictions abound. And the tattoo, even. I think Dr. Welsing might have a comment on that as well. Other folks that we've not heard from at all, if you have either comments on what you've heard thus far, if you have your own situation, if we have any black entrepreneurs, if you don't have to deal with racism at all, that would be a feat. I would, you know, certainly be interested in hearing any commentary to that effect. Or if you, you know, have comments on how being self-employed has minimized or mitigated the racism you experience, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm in my car, so I'm on Bluetooth. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am. Greetings, caller in the Bay Area. Oh, is this our caller in Wisconsin? Actually, sorry.
Yes, sir. No, that's no problem. No problem. No, good evening to everybody, Gus, and the callers and listeners. A quick thing about the first, the person who wrote in. I found that it, in those situations, it's always beneficial to go to the white person with the most power. I don't know if they're black, if the their white supervisor's black supervisor has a white person over them, but that would be the person that I would go to. I found that to be very helpful. I myself have had situations at my job, my current job, where there was a young man, suspected racist, who decided that he was going to play Massa on the plantation and tell the Negro what to do all the time. And this person had a lower title than me, but of course, you know, he's white, so that didn't matter. And I just turned to the most powerful white person in the room and said, what do you think about that? And that white person said, no, I think that's incorrect. And I just didn't say anything, and that was taken care of immediately. So that might be a good thing to do in that situation. I also had an update to my situation. I think last week I called in and I said that someone had contacted me on LinkedIn about a travel software company looking for, you know, developers in this area. As far as I know, the company I work for is the only travel software company in this area. So I just asked a few questions, and then he was very slick with it. He connected with me first on LinkedIn and then asked, you know, and then brought up the situation. So I immediately disconnected from this person, removed the link. The very next day, one of the network guys at my job decided to ask me to connect on LinkedIn. The very next day, I have not responded to that. I'm not going to approve or decline it. I'm just going to leave it there like I never even got it, because I thought that was pretty interesting that that person would do that right after I disconnected with this other person, which makes me think that this person is a spy. So then another suspected racist at my job was talking to me, and all of a sudden he said, well, you know, you've got all these side projects going on. And I said, what are you talking about? What side project? Oh, you know, things with other travel software companies. I'm like, well, I think you have more information than I do, sir. What are these side projects? And he says, oh, you know. And then he gives me a look like I'm not telling the truth, to which I just said, You know, so I think that, yes, that person was a plant. I think that they were using that person to get information. And so I'll be very mindful of that. Also, they've hired a new developer for the team I work on, and he was hired at a higher pay grade than me. He was actually hired at Analyst 2, which I thought was very interesting. I didn't know this. Well, I think he was hired at Analyst 2 because I went on the email. Now, he doesn't have very much experience, and I was supposed to get that analyst position, or I was trying to get the analyst position, I should say. And he doesn't have very much experience, but I went on our email, and our titles are listed by our email name in the directory, and sure enough, it said Analyst 2. So he was speaking to my supervisor in his cubicle, and I go to the cubicle while they're speaking, and when they're done, I ask him, I say, well, what's your job title? And he looks really scared and looks at my supervisor, and my supervisor tells me this long story. Oh, he's a developer, too. And I said, well, that analyst, too, by name. And he said, oh, well, that's a mistake. You know, they cloned him from someone else. And I'm just like, oh, very interesting. Okay. So I thought that was interesting. I have resolved not to help this person get up to speed, so to speak. I'm not going to train this person. I'm going to find every imaginative way I can to not train this person. If he is at a higher pay grade than me, then he should be training me. And that's the position I'm taking on that one. So other than that, I have no update. Hopefully I'll get a new position, and I can get off this plantation. With that, I'll mute my line. Thanks for letting me speak.
Wow, that is the best use of the term imaginative that I've heard in quite some time. That is spectacular. But the best, I appreciated that, but the best portion of the commentary we heard from software developer in Wisconsin, when the non-white person, manager, was saying, whatever they said, victim, whatever they were saying that apparently was incorrect, she didn't yell at him, didn't accost him. You coon, what are you talking about? None of that. Same thing we say consistently, stay in the question lane. And then turning to the most powerful person, the white person, what do you think about that? Problem solved. You can ask one question, you don't have to say anything else, and can get the matter resolved. Efficient counter-racism, where you can use as few words as possible, as few questions as possible to achieve the result that you want. And again, solving problems without creating new problems. And even bonus in this one, no conflict with the non-white person. Woo! Spectacular. But again, and these are the sort of things to be expected. I think you can get much better, and I think you get better, at least in my view, what I'm calling better. A non-white person on the job is being discourteous or mistreating you in whatever way, where you can get that stopped, neutralized, as it says in the title. You don't have to curse that person out. You don't have to call them any names, and you can stop the mistreatment. That's really what we want, getting that done efficiently, where it doesn't take a month, it doesn't take 6 months. You can get that solved in the next five. How long does it take to say, sir, ma'am, what do you think about that? Getting problems solved quickly and without conflict. I didn't have to call him any names and worry, is he gonna be trying to find my lunch in the refrigerator to poison me and calling me all kinds of names and that sort of thing. Problem solved. We can move forward in a harmonious manner until racists get to the next problem.
Gus, I just wanted to say one thing. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
But that was a white person, actually, that was trying to give me all these directions.
The most powerful white person. Yeah, I thought it was a non-white person who did that. Woo! Right on. Thank you for the clarification. Appreciate that. The portion, make sure I got it right. The portion where you told us last week, where you got kind of the suspicious listing for some sort of job, and then the white person comes back this week that you work with and is making these strange comments about these side projects. Master deceivers. And I mean, it's terrible. I mean, to have to work in that sort of environment, like that, it can't be. Wow, you know, these are my team members. We spend all this time together and sometimes years working together on all these projects, and I got to go to work like I'm working with a spy who's trying to sabotage and ruin my life and career. Like, that's the way that I have to think. Like, wow, like you all of these ingenious, I mean, you talk about imagination, scheming and plotting and all of this, and the surveillance that you talked about last week where you were saying they were going and look, I mean, wow, that's the sort of folks that you're working with. And again, just, you know, have an understanding that that is what the system of racism, white supremacy is going to be. Not being stunned about that, not being surprised about that, and again, not being emotional, really thinking and trying to the best of our ability to use logic to evaluate different bits of information. You know, is this job offer even legitimate that I'm getting? Why would he even ask a question in that manner? And I think also that was a pretty solid job in not giving information, again, asking questions when he brought up the side project thing. What are you talking about? You seem to be more informed about this, and not even pursuing it when he decided he wasn't going to say anything else. File that away and I'll process that later. I think sometimes we can kind of overtalk with whites, and that's what they want us to do, to provoke us, to get us talking. Same thing I said before, being efficient, precise, deliberate, as few words as possible. And sometimes the best course is to not say anything. I'm sure we will have updates. Other folks, if we have not heard from you at all and you have a hand up, you should definitely proceed. Any folks we've not heard from at all?
May I be heard?
Greetings, Red in Nevada.
Hello. Hello, everyone. Thank you for taking my call. Just a few comments this week and more than last week. The first one is earlier this week with the racist who can't remember my name. Like I said before, I feel like honestly, at first I thought with the seat rearrangement, it seemed better, but now I see that it's actually worse for me because now I'm having to try to make sure that I keep conversations short with suspected racists because they see that I have been, like I said, more talkative to Black females. And I do have a story this week. I feel like it may be a display of Black self-respect from one of the Black females that I'm now around, that I'm now have to sit by. But with the white woman, she is starting to, unfortunately, speak to me again, or kind of invite me into a little bit of conversation. So she didn't come in to work one day, and it would have just been me and her working in the one area. And so I was very glad that she wasn't there because that just would have been made my work day even longer. But she tells me when she does come in, she kind of stops me as I'm going past her. She was like, "Oh, I'm sorry, I let you down by not coming in." And I had to stop myself from laughing in her face, but you know, just trying to, and she was kept, and I was wanting to go on my break, you know, not have to waste my time speaking to this racist. I mean, I was like, I basically kept it short. I'm like, oh, it was fine, whatever. And she kept trying to kind of somewhat give me more information. And I basically started to just walk away. And I'm trying real hard to find a fine line between not being rude to her because she completely disgusts me. Not just the fact that just, you know, her racist behavior, but also the fact that she digs in her nose all throughout the day. And this is somebody who is in my line of vision. So it's disgusting. She digs in her nose and eats at her desk. It's disgusting. But just trying to find that fine line between not being so rude to her to where she can't, I don't want her to necessarily go to the more powerful whites and say, well, oh, she's treating me differently from other people. But I still kind of feel like I don't know if my excuse of her really not knowing my name is maybe a good enough excuse to where it's like, well, I don't really want to talk to this person anyway. So that was the unfortunate commentary with that racist. The other thing, just noticing just other Black people around me and how they speak to racists. They definitely seem a little bit more confused, at least to me, but you know, VGQ, of course. And there's this Black lady, this Black female, who was talking about what she was wearing, and she was kind of comparing herself to the Nation of Islam and how they're usually very well-dressed but also very covered up, and how just the banter between her and this suspected racist, it's another suspected racist, not the one who can't remember my name, but the suspected racist, she's like, oh yeah, I know what you're talking about. And yeah, I've seen a lot of things, you know, it basically like they were just like, of course, you know, just being racist and not, and I wasn't necessarily focusing, trying to not focus on what the confused victim was saying, but kind of focus on what this white person was saying, just how coded her language was. Basically, you know, they know about the NOI and just kind of being able to disguise their somewhat disgust, but they kind of had like a laugh about it too for a little while. The last thing, which like I was saying, it could be an act of Black self-respect. So one of the higher bosses came over to the area where I sit, and she had made comment on my hair, another Black female's hair, and then another Black female's hair, all of us staying in the same area. And the younger, I won't say that she's younger, but I guess she's not that much older than I, but she had, because the white woman, the suspected racist, usually, you know, she, well, not usually, she's always, I feel like she's kind of one of those people who may be more confused. Black people would say that she's one of the quote unquote good white people, but I'm glad that she, I observed this to see that there's, that really doesn't make sense, that term good white people. But she's basically, you know, commenting on how nice it is that, you know, we can change up our hair. Sometimes it could be straight or afro, whatever. So the black female, the somewhat younger black female, she goes to introduce herself. The higher boss goes to introduce herself to her, and she has her hand out to shake her hand. And the black female, she was like, no, we've met before. You've done this twice already. And she was like, and the suspected racist, she was like, oh, you changed up your hair and I'm sorry. And I, you know, I just didn't, you know, recognize you. And that's when she tries to like turn it into this whole, oh, well, you know, your hair is just so wonderful and this, that, and the other. But I thought it was so, I laughed after the boss walked away and I kind of said a couple of things to the black female. But she, the black female, just her face was, she just looked like she just didn't have the time to, you know, keep reintroducing herself just because she wanted to change her hair. But she just looked at the suspected racist hand and just, that's when she said, well, she didn't shake her hand or she didn't, you know, back down from like, no, I'm not going to keep reintroducing myself to you. You've done this before. So I definitely appreciated that with her, from her. And she was like, when I said a couple things to her, she was like, yeah, she's done this. And it's like, yeah, I know I wear my emotions on my face, but you know, I don't know why we have to keep going through this basically. But that's all I wanted to share this week. Thank you for allowing me to speak. I'll mute my line.
Appreciate that, Red. I would say that's black self-respect. I think, you know, it's, and just being truthful, you know, I don't feel like pretending that, you know, this is my first time meeting you again. Like, I don't feel like doing that today. I mean, it's not that deep. I mean, come on. There should be, I mean, they got facial recognition software now, right? I mean, come on. I don't know if you all have badges or what have you, but I mean, really, it's not that deep. Come on, get it together. Stop practicing white supremacy racism. I think that's black self-respect. I think that goes along with the name thing, because I think a lot of times it'll be things like that, just when they don't pronounce your name correctly. You talked about that so many, mentioned it today. But just little things like that, they will let slide. I think we've had a lot of people call in and talk about things that they allow to slide. Whites on the job calling them nicknames or not calling them their name or just all kinds of things where you know they would not do this to you if they were not racist, as opposed to if you were black. You know that's what's happening. But I'm not going to say anything. This is, you know, a small one. I'll let the black self-respect to say no. I'm not going to, you know, tolerate any sort of incorrectness. Let's go ahead and stop that to just promote justice, promote correctness and how this person is going to relate to me in the workplace consistently, that we're not going to allow any sort of incorrect behavior at any time from anyone. I think that's real, real important on the job and really all areas of people activity, but especially on the job. Other folks have commentary. And again, I think Red said that as well about being mindful about what she's saying, knowing that she's in a, I guess, environment where she converses more since she's around more black people, and then feeling like whites might observe that and what have you. Being very precise with what you say on the job, how it's said, very precise. Other folks who dialed in, if we have folks we've not heard from at all, you should go ahead and speak now.
Jeff, can I say one more thing? I'm sorry, I forgot to add it.
Let's hear it.
Really quick. Just about, I think it might have been the caller from Florida, kind of commenting about white or non-black, but possibly non-white people and how to react around them. And I know that's a code that I've actually had to come up with since I'm here in Nevada, having to deal with people who may be temporarily considered white. But I basically, and I don't know if this is the right code or not, but I basically treat them like they are white. If white people, even, you know, on Wednesdays and Thursdays, treat them like they're white, then that's how I treat them until, you know, otherwise, basically, white people then fully classify them as being non-white. And again, just, you know, just putting that out there, just how I treat them. But thank you, and I'll meet my line.
Context of white supremacy. Going to be important, I think, that racially ambiguous individuals, where we might have some confusion about their racial classification, that definitely tends to come up in the workplace and as a problem, as something folks need to have a code for how they got to deal with that, because I could see that, you know, being more widespread as things continue. Number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Again, black entrepreneurs, if you have commentary, or if you have not, or if you have completely eliminated racism as a result of you being quote-unquote self-employed, definitely would like to hear that perspective. If not, if you are self-employed, share. And then if we have any thoughts on what's been shared thus far, your own experience. Actually, before I get to other folks, Stacy in the UK, let's see, 2:49 a.m. Friday morning. Did you have any additional commentary you wanted to share?
Yeah, I did, Gus. A couple of things. I guess my own time stamp. Obviously, people know that I've been going through terrorism, which started a specific act of terrorism, which started at the beginning of January 2017 and is still ongoing. And since September, I have been kept out of the office by my employers. So that's now nearly 10 months. And just to note that I'm the victim. I mean, it started off with a false accusation against me, where someone accused me of shouting at him. And I took it to grievance because it was just a culmination of 3 years worth of terrorism. It's probably more than 3 years, but definitely heightened a period of 3 years of terrorism. And included my director pushing past me aggressively on more than one occasion, and another non-white person, but rather than doing what they should be doing and suspending the individuals, they've chosen to keep me out of the office. So that's nearly 10 months now. So that's my time stamp. I wanted to a really quick one, because I realized that I was thinking about Thomas in New York and your Yoga Chronicles, Gus, and Thomas mentioning that he doesn't, I think he probably had the conversation with you, doesn't do yoga because he's not very flexible, and your comment that you do yoga to become flexible. When I first started, which was encouraged by your updates, I found it really difficult to do. And what I did do is I persevered and I found a yoga mat on Amazon, which is really thick. So it's about 3 centimeters thick. And in terms of the cushioning, and so that really does help, both in terms of just getting used to stretching, things like that, but also just making it easier to persevere and do stretches. But yeah, that's the last thing I'll say on that. I wanted to talk about I think it was based on Ivy's update last week or the week before compensatory calling about having to do meet up for a luncheon or whatever with suspected racists, and one of them who's been terrorizing her and just wanting to know how to cope with that. And I do think what works for me certainly is always reminding myself what the firefighter in Florida always says, actually, about minimizing expectation. And I guess just preparing yourself mentally to know that this person is going to try and terrorize you, but also then just trying to get yourself into a mental state where you're now just expecting to be terrorized, but also channeling the fact that you can deal with it. And that's the codification that I'm trying to employ, in that you can't stop them necessarily doing what they're doing, but it's about how you emotionally prepare yourself for the situation. But it reminded me of a luncheon that I really do try not to go to, work events, and especially because I was being terrorized. So the last thing I wanted to do was be around these people in my own time, and certainly not while spending my own money. But this was a Christmas lunch which was being organized by work, and my manager or head of team was insisting that I be there via my manager. So what I did was I arranged a call. Well, I was on the phone anyway, so they all went off to lunch because it was they took time out of the work day to go off to Christmas lunch. And then I had a call anyway, so I arrived slightly later, but I knew she was insisting that I be there. But what I did do is I arranged a call for 3 o'clock so that I would leave early before it finished, so at least I was there physically. Now, when I got there, they'd already obviously all seated themselves, and I wasn't actually paying attention, but I sat in the empty chair. I didn't look at where everybody was sat, but there was another non-white female who had been in the organization for a few months by that point. And like with the caller who works in the courthouse, they did an element of tackiness where they introduced her to everybody else except me. So, but I did make a point of introducing myself to her. But anyway, she'd been in the organization for a couple of months by that point. And when I got to the luncheon, I sat down, and she made a point of pointing out that all the black people were sat at one side of the table and all the white people were sat at the others. And she said it a little bit too loud for my likings, actually, but I think she was being used as a tool by the racists at that point. But nonetheless, the observation was very correct. Anyway, so we had ordered lunch. And so there, I had originally ordered one thing, and then I changed my mind midway. So I told the waitress I wanted something else instead. And then eventually they started bringing the lunches, and the waitress came to me, and she had brought what I'd originally asked for, and I was kind of and then she'd moved away too quickly, so I was like, oh god, has she messed up the order or whatever? So I was waiting for her to come back. Now, there was a white female down the other end of the table, and it was quite a long table because there's a few of us, and she apparently started shouting, saying that's her order. So I said, I didn't answer because she's definite racist and been nasty to me for quite some time. But either way, I just thought the waitress at that point had messed up my order. And I wasn't clear whether or not she had just given me the wrong meal, or she in fact didn't change my original order. So I was trying to call the waitress, waiting for her to come back. And so I was paying attention more to the waitress rather than the people down the other end of the table shouting at me. When this, by this point, it was more than one person, and there was a non-white male who was sat next to me, and he was like, oh, I think Helen, I think that's Helen. So I said, well, hold on a minute, I'm going to check, because obviously I changed my order. So I'm calling the waitress, everybody can see I'm waiting for the waitress to come back, and they're still making a fuss down the other end of the table, and I'm just ignoring them because I can see I'm trying to call the waitress. So eventually the waitress turns up, and I said to her, before the waitress actually turned up, what had happened is the black male who was sat next to me, He took the plate from off the table in front of me and was handing it to down the table to the white female. And I turned and I noticed he was doing it. So I took the plate bag out of his hand and put it back down on the table in front of me. Didn't even acknowledge that he did it other than taking the plate back and putting it down on the table in front of me. Then I waited for the waitress and she came over eventually. And she said, I asked her, oh, did she change my order? And she said, oh, no, sorry, I didn't. So at that point, I said, thank you. And then I started to eat my lunch. Now, to be honest with you, I realized that she probably did mess up the orders and that eventually she'd turn up with my the what I'd asked for in replace of what I'd been given. But at that point, she had said to me, no, sorry, I didn't change it. This is what you originally asked for. So I tucked in. And lo and behold, eventually, when she brought all the bills, she did actually turn up with a plate, which was what I changed my order to. And at that point, I just thought to myself, yeah, that's what I thought. The black female who was sat next to me said, oh, yeah, looks like she did mess up. She did mess up. So I said, exactly. And I carried on eating. Now, there are two things there. Now, obviously, the black male's behavior in that, why would you ever do that? Whether there was racism involved or not. But the mentality to actually think he's going to take my plate and hand it to this white female down the table. And I, because I wasn't looking at her, I don't know whether she asked him to do it or whether he took it upon himself to do it. I have a feeling they asked him to do it. But either way, I, in my mind, I really wanted to say something not so great to him, but I didn't. I controlled myself, so I'm pretty proud of myself. And we continued at lunch, and we talked, and we were, you know, were very cordial until I left early for my meeting. But yeah, just all kinds of things that went on there. But I guess it's the dangers of being going to lunch. But I was very codified in that I managed my time efficiently. I got there late, and I left early, and I. Even though he annoyed the hell out of me, I controlled my reaction for a non-white male who seemed very confused. The racist, I ignored her because I knew, as I said, probably that the order had been messed up. But as she was so nasty to me and was just being disrespectful, I thought, no, you can jolly well wait. I'll meet my line there, Gus.
Well, spectacular job keeping your composure. That's so critically important with regards to counter-racism science. Racists are going to dogs bark, birds chirp, whites worldwide practice white supremacy. We can't lose our composure when they do so. Phenomenal job. And particularly, we can't lose our composure when other victims of white supremacy frustrate us, which happens frequently. I'm sure Gus T frustrates listeners regularly. But great job there as well, because that's so important in the workplace. That's, you know, what happens a lot of times is we end up being in conflict, victims, non-white people. We end up being in conflict with each other, often for the entertainment of racists on the job. Would not surprise me if, you know, they had directly, indirectly, racists did tell him to do it. That's what they've told us, you know, for the entirety of white supremacy. That's our whole existence, to serve worship whites, their every beckon and call. So, you know, certainly they are most to blame. That's, you know, black self-respect on the part of Stacy to remain composed throughout and to not even respond. Planned ignoring can be so successful in the workplace and lots of other environments as well. You are not required to respond. That is so important. You are not required to respond. When people, just because someone says something to you, even if they say your name, you are not obligated to respond. Just be mindful of that. Willful, planned ignoring can be a very successful strategic strategy
Emmy has talked about that as well, where you give them nothing, no verbals, no nothing. It can be extremely effective, tactical in the workplace. And pause. How does she have a 3-centimeter yoga mat? I don't even have a 3-centimeter yoga mat, and I'm about 10 days, I think, from starting teacher training, and I don't have a 3-centimeter yoga mat. I can imagine that being way more comfortable, substantially more comfortable.
It is.
Yeah. Wow. What?
Amazon.
Okay.
I'll send you the link.
Appreciate it. Thank you kindly. That's amazing. Wow. Anyway, and phenomenal Black self-respect in passing on the information to your offspring as well, to get lots and lots of older folks who can be resources to help in her career development. Spectacular. Talking to our children about career development and ending white supremacy. Other folks we've not heard from at all, if you have a hand up, line should be open. Proceed.
Hi, Gus. It's B from Toronto, Canada. How are you doing?
Greetings to the six. Right poorly. Good to hear from you, B.
Yes, I'm doing right poorly as well. Your platform is awesome, so thank you for having this show. It's unfortunate that it has to be for 10 years and that white supremacy has not been eradicated, but we are carrying forward to try and do our best within the system. Greetings to your callers and listeners as well. The reason I'm calling is I had some interesting insights to share. Would you like to hear them?
Oh, absolutely.
Sure. Can you hear me okay, too? I just have you on speaker.
Crystal.
Oh, perfect. Thank you. Okay, so the first thing is I wanted to share with yourself, callers and listeners, is in the process of trying to work towards justice under the system of white supremacy, where there is constant, persistent injustice. Keep in mind that unfortunately, there are people closest to you that will not support you, including family members. I know that this has happened to me unfortunately, I've had to go from different jobs to jobs, you know, with white supremacy. One of the main roles is trying to keep you economically unstable. And unfortunately, I've been through that. And I remember when I was more confused, I would have, you know, people as close as my mom telling me, oh, the reason why you lost this job is because it's your fault. You can't work with these people. You can't do anything. And no, that wasn't the case at all. It was the fact that white supremacy was being enacted. It was because I was actually very competent at my job. And the fact that people were getting feeling threatened by it. This is the reason as to why it has led to the instability economically. So just to let your callers and listeners know, as well as yourself, know that, you know, whenever you're encountering even family members constantly doing that, sure, you can exercise patience. But not to be afraid to, you know, shorten your influential circle, so to speak. I've had to sever ties with some family members as a result, because I did not want to have that type of negativity. So that was one thing I wanted to share. The second thing I wanted to share was something that happened today. In Ontario here, we just had our elections. Well, Election Day is today for the Ontario Premier. So I went to my voting station that I was designated to go to based on where I lived. And there was a white woman that was behind me. And she was in a negative space. She presented in a negative space, as she was constantly muttering and didn't feel the line was going fast enough. So there was a gentleman in front of me, and he finally went. And then when he left, she tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Oh, you're next. You can go into the line on the other side." Now, the line on the other side, we have voting registration cards. So I had my registration card. The line on the other side are for people who do not have a registration card. So it was quite interesting how she felt comfortable enough to tap me on my shoulder, especially the fact that she doesn't know me. And, I could see right in my line of vision that I was next. So there was no reason for her to tap me on the shoulder and give me such information. So what I did was I turned around. I don't recommend this to anybody, but I just decided to try it just to test it out and see what happens if I were to do the same to her. So I went and I tapped her on the shoulder and I said, "Oh, you know, by the way, love, that line is for people without cards." And if you could see the steely look on her face, it was priceless. It was almost like, "Who is this nigra to touch me?" And I just had a smug on my face because I'm going, this is really interesting. Like it was just like a very cold observation of, and I was just smug at it because I was going, wow, okay, it's really interesting that she felt comfortable enough to invade my personal space and touch my body. But when I do the same to her, she just had this look it's just hard to describe. It was like, oh my goodness, who was this person to touch me? So that was really interesting. The second thing that I've been doing as well on my commute to work is if I'm by a group of white men, I will, or even a group of white people, what I'll do is I will clutch my purse tighter. Because what I've noticed is that in the past, when I was more confused, everywhere I would go, the one thing I would notice is that white women kept clutching their purses closer, and I wasn't quite certain as to why that was. So I started clutching my purse closer when I'm around a group of white people, and it was just really interesting just to see their reactions to that. I often get like really cold, angry glares. So I was like, that was an interesting observation. In fact, a couple of times I had, there were two people that actually acted out their aggressions toward me by like bumping into me rather abruptly, of which I just clutched onto my purse tighter. Let's see. The last thing that I wanted to add was, because I'm self-employed, so I say, like, it's because I went through the getting the business incorporated, it doesn't, okay, the reason, let me just give you a little bit of a background. The reason why I became self-employed was because I was tired of having to go, like, tired of trying to go through the promotion and not getting, or the promotion race, but not getting it. Even though I was told, okay, my work performance is great, verbally, but when it came to actually putting it in writing, oh, there's a little something here or a little something there, any other reason for me not to get the promotion. So I decided, okay, well, I'm going to start my own business so that I can get the title that I need to get. And, unfortunately it didn't work out the way that I thought I would. I mean, the dream was start my own business. I have my own clients because I work with people living with disabilities, have my own clients, and then I'll be able to bring on more people that way. Whereas the reality is I have my business, but I have to go through other agencies to have them subcontract their clientele to my business. So technically I'm still employed under an employer, but they just have it as a different relationship. It's just one company under another company And the difference is that I'm responsible for all my taxes, not the company at all, right? And they don't have to necessarily observe the labor law because technically I'm not their employee. I'm a contractor in that respect. So for what I would recommend is for those people who are thinking to be self-employed to get out of the employment scene because they're tired of having to tired of not getting the promotions that they deserve. Don't think that it's any easier when you're self-employed. In fact, unfortunately, I don't even have a person that's employed that I've employed with me. It's a one-person operation. So that's why I say that technically I'm still employed under another company. So I hope that was clear enough. And those are the things that I just had to say. Thank you so much for listening.
Appreciate that from the Six Global System of Racism, White Supremacy. We are doing our global Sunday talk on white supremacy, racism, the 17th of this month. If you want to join us, that program is on a Sunday. It's always the third Sunday of the month. And it would be 3 p.m. Eastern. It's early because people like Stacy and some of our other visitors in different parts of the world, the time difference, the time zones are so wacky. That's as neutral as things could be for widespread participation. So if you have time on the 17th, that afternoon would be grand. We should have folks from quite a few different spots hanging out to chat it up. I think the last program, we didn't even have full participation because I just brought the program back after the flood. But I think even then we still had our caller from South Korea. We had a few folks from the UK. It was even then still pretty good. Participation should be better even next time around that we're getting back into rhythm of things. But for sure, much obliged for you sharing. Always think that's super important, even though it might not be as fun to call in and talk about how tough it is to be an entrepreneur, a black entrepreneur, non-white entrepreneur in a system of white supremacy. But I think that's important. If that's, you know, what we're dealing with. Also, the beginning part of your commentary, I have heard that from so many black people, particularly people who listen to the cows, where you are mistreated on a job. If you're terminated, you don't get a promotion on a job, and you're sharing this with the people that you care about, friends, family. I mean, it can be real close. Like sometimes the person, your parent, partner, you know, who person that you've procreated with, and they will say, oh, well, that's your fault. You did something. You did something. It had to be you. Not Ren. Then if you try it, oh, you're just making an excuse. You just blame white. Man, if I had a dollar every time I heard that, wowee, I could have about 5 Teslas to cruise the city of Seattle. A big influence on the cow, because I've heard that so many different times, experienced it myself. The system of white supremacy, flawless at creating where victims blame other victims, as opposed to, nope, it is the system of white supremacy that is designed, as you said, to have us completely in a state of chaos economically and with our jobs and careers, total chaos and frustration. And being honest about that, huge, in my view at least, a huge part of the process in correcting all this. I've talked about the commute thing for a number of years. I've said that's a part of racism, white supremacy, because you do have to get to and from the job. So I've included that in workplace racism. That is interesting. Your experiment about clutching the purse, I would just encourage listeners, we can be conducting experiments in a lot of different ways, on the job, to and from the job. There are lots of different ways that you can experiment with regards to counter-racism and just observing, studying the behavior patterns of individuals classified as white. That is something that we should be engaged in on a regular basis, even on the job. Other folks, was that Stacy? Was that you?
Yeah. I just wanted to quickly add something on this entrepreneurship thing, actually. A couple of years ago, at the height of, well, I guess it's been terrorism all the way around, but I was working on a particular project, doing exactly what I'd been asked to do, which was to develop the project up, but also it was going to be launched. And the organisation that I worked for, one of the group directors, wanted me to also get other businesses to agree to back the project, because there was going to be sort of like a media launch of it as well. So I'd done everything that I was being asked to do. And in terms of this particular matter, I had gone up front and made sure everybody was clear about what I was doing. However, my head of team, somebody who was, an executive board member of one of these global banks, to agree to back the project, and I gave that as part of my update. She didn't actually, my head of team, she didn't actually mention that point specifically. I had forwarded the matter to her in an email, but I was, for some reason, I was at her desk and she was asking me something. Then as I was leaving the desk, she said to me, "Oh, perhaps you'd like to go and start your own company." And I walked away from that so confused. And I'm laughing now because I'm laughing at myself. But it was just, I guess, the start of her paranoia and wanting me out of her team and, I guess, out of the organization. You think you're doing a good job? You do a good job. You're doing what you're being asked to do. And that can be a problem. But when I walked away from it, her desk, I was like, did I just hear that? She did just say it. What does she mean by it? Why would she say that? And it took me a long time to process and just accept, because up until that point, she'd been nice in inverted commas, air quotes. Her behavior was slowly changing and the attacks were increasing. And that was just one of them that, you know, it's not even something you can prove. And I'm sure if someone had asked her, she said, "Oh, no, I was just being very complimentary. You know, she's just excellent," and whatever, or deny that she said it at all. So that was just my link to the comment on entrepreneurship, because sometimes we're encouraged to go and start a business. I'll mute my line.
Wow. The tackiness of white women, major theme throughout. Interesting twist on the entrepreneurial side of things. I was not expecting that, but I can't say that I am surprised, even from the other side of the world, other side of the planet. Before I nab some of the other people who dialed in, we had a person who wrote in. I think it's a non-white female. She says, "There is a white man who is a manager at my job who frequently comes around my cubicle." Forgive me. I was puzzled at because she doesn't say that this is her manager, right? She says there's a white man who is a manager at my job. I just think that's important. If this is your direct manager or if this is just someone who is a manager at the place where you work. Anyway, he seems very focused on me. It makes me very uncomfortable. Do you have any suggestions on what I should do about this? I am thinking about leaving my job. I would say if it's enough to make you uncomfortable, then it should be addressed. I guess it would be helpful to know more details, to know if this person, if you're listening live, like to know, is this your direct manager? If it's not your direct manager, then I would probably be more aggressive about how I deal with this, because if it's not your direct manager, then there's no reason that he should just be hovering in your space on a regular basis for no reason. Like, I would be a lot more aggressive about inquiring and alerting people that I do not feel. That's why I said before about, yes, it is very helpful and advisable to point out when someone is committing an infraction that is a violation against the company, not against you on a personal level. However, if there's something that is a safety concern, that's one that, hey, I would lead. I do not feel safe. And then if it's something that I think it's site-wide, like the problem Droptomania was talking about, do that as well. But I mean, I do not feel safe. That should be enough to get action beginning that, oh, well, wait a minute, let's make sure things are safe. Why is this happening? Who is this person that, you know, is just hanging out in your area? Is the person there for a reason? Are they doing something? Or, I mean, yeah, but is this your direct supervisor? That would be a good question to know. And are they like talking? Are they just looking at you? I'd want to know more detail about that. But I would definitely say something regardless of all of that, even if it is your direct supervisor. You can ask, you know, is it something that you need, or did you have a question? Just sometimes if the person is there and I'm not sure if I'm doing something incorrect or what have you, to just try and, you know, get it so that you can be comfortable at your job. I would certainly handle it differently if it was my supervisor that was doing this in the direct area. I think, you know, they might be able to say, well, hey, I'm observing my workers. That's a part of my job as a supervisor. I'm supposed to be here to look over, see what you're doing. Do any of the folks that are listening in, because this person is asking directly for feedback, any of the folks have suggestions on what was presented? You have a white manager. Don't know if it's direct manager or not, white manager who is just kind of staying in this person's area and making them uncomfortable, how you would address this?
May I add something, Gus?
This is Drake's cousin, B in the Six.
Oh, gosh. No, not Drake's cousin. Drake doesn't know. Drake's from Forest Hill. He doesn't know anything much about the Black community. He's just an imitation. But I digress. yes, because I've actually had this happen to me a couple of times. One with a asexual white female with homoerotic tendencies towards me, and another with a white male. And it involved surveillancing, coming like really close into my personal space. What I would recommend is that the person who wrote in is to definitely document the occurrences. Make sure that she's up to par on her policies and procedures, especially in terms of harassment, if there is things around sexual harassment, and making sure that, well, hopefully she also has a union. If she doesn't, then, you know, to again still document and accumulate that way. And if she can get a transfer out of that job, that's even better than just having to quit. Or if she can, you know, see if she can find ways to try and avoid. If it's a direct supervisor, it's a little harder because they may call her into the office at any point. You know, so it might be difficult, but to definitely document. You know, and unfortunately, they also have ways of minimizing and trivializing these things too when employees bring up these matters, especially around sexual harassment. But in this climate that we're in under the Me Too movement and whatnot, depending if it's a white male, then she may be a little more successful. For an asexual white female, I'm not quite sure. So I'm not quite sure if she mentioned the gender of the supervisor, but
white man.
Those were my... A white man. Okay. So then she might be hopefully a little more successful under the Me Too, like with that Me Too movement going on, you know, documenting, making it known, you know, I feel really uncomfortable. You know, is there a way that I can, if you want me to follow up instead of following up in your office, can I just follow up with an email? You know, things of that nature, and send that through email. I would like to follow up with you via email. You know, and, you know, just make sure that the nonverbal cues are illustrating that you're not feeling comfortable in that person's presence. Mm. And then if she has to leave, then she leaves. You know, so either decisions, and not, and I hope that she doesn't feel at fault for either decisions, because none of this is her fault. So thank you.
For sure. Appreciate the suggestions, B. always think it's right in those type of situations. And in general, consult your policy and procedure to see what they have to say about sexual harassment, that sort of thing in the workplace. That can be helpful. And even bringing that up, once you do not feel comfortable in the workplace, you can ask. And I'm an advocate, once you start a job, to ask about what's their policy and procedure around sexual harassment, or if you are feeling uncomfortable in the workplace. But you can even ask in the staff meeting, particularly take advantage of, you know, what's happening right now. You don't have to indict anyone directly. You can just ask about, you know, what's the policy, what's the procedure. Maybe we even can get a refresher training course here to deal, you know, in light of all of the allegations and things that have been made. Other folks have suggestions. I'm keeping an eye on my email in case we get an update as to whether or not this is this person's direct supervisor or not, because I do think that's important. Other folks have suggestions on how you would deal with a white man who's just kind of being in your space, white manager, just kind of being in your space, making you uncomfortable on the job.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am. This is our software developer in Wisconsin.
Yes, sir. So I'm a big fan of asking questions. I think I would ask, you know, do you need anything? That would be, or are you looking for me for something, or is there some work that I need to have? Is there some work that's due to you, or something related to the job? I don't know if this her direct supervisor, that would probably be the most effective thing to do. And every time he comes around, continually asking questions. I know that she says she's feeling uncomfortable, so it may be kind of intimidating for her at first. But if that was my direct supervisor, that would be what I would do. I find that when you ask a great deal of questions to whites, they generally tend to stay away from you after a while. If it's not her supervisor, I would still ask those questions, but I would ask questions like, is there a project that I'm supposed to be working on with you? Is there something that you need? So on and so forth. Again, asking questions I find is the best way to neutralize things, because a lot of times white people just aren't very excited to answer questions from black folks. So that's all I have, and and I do think that documentation is very important as well. Getting back to V and your suggestions as well. That's all I have. I'll mute my line.
Much obliged. Appreciate that. Did other folks who dialed in other suggestions on how you would deal with this white man manager who's just kind of surveilling, being in this black female's office space or office work area?
Gus, can I come in?
I'll wait.
All right, on. Stacy in the UK.
Yeah, I'll try and be quick. I've been in this position, and I was dealing with it as part of the overall sort of grievance that I'm dealing with. So a couple of years ago, I did have a similar situation where somebody who does not manage me seemed to think that she had the authority to come and really, I mean, literally micromanage me to the point of even asking me if my diary was up to date, and, you know, that kind of behavior in front of other people in the team. And she certainly wasn't my manager, and there was no issue with me keeping my diary up to date. So either way, it was just inappropriate. I did raise the matter with my head of team just about her overall behaviour. And, you know, they lie and deny that certain things are going on. But it was clear to me, because she was also involving herself in my work, that she was up to something bigger than just, you know, trying to assert her authority. And so my point to the person who wrote in is to just be mindful that sometimes, you know, okay, they can be, you know, just doing idle terrorism, or not so idle terrorism, but, you know, just getting the joy out of terrorizing you. But just be observant as to maybe there is another agenda, and think about that as you decide how you want to respond. Because this person was undermining me in terms of my job. So just looking for ammunition and then trying to take over projects that are high profile because they want to take credit for your work, and also, you know, because you're a Negro, so why would you be given such high profile projects? So just be observant, mindful of the agenda, but also to raise it with your managers. Now, it didn't actually stop this person from succeeding in what they were doing in terms of, you know, undermining me and my work. But certainly what it did do, because I did, after meeting with my manager, I did send an email summarising the discussion and what had been said. So I was able to use that as part of the evidence in terms of the 3 years' worth of terrorism that I have been dealing with. And I'll meet my line there, guys.
Spectacular, Stacey. Thank you for yielding the floor, Emmy. Good to hear from you. Not here. Now, yes, ma'am.
Sorry about that. My advice would be simple. I think that when you're at your job, that's kind of what it is, whether you can feel it all the time or not. So my advice would be to just do your job. I've had, in practically all of my jobs, there's been some white person that has attempted to oversee me or micromanage me, or just like lord over me in some shape or fashion. And for me, before, you know, becoming codified and whatnot, that was just something I was like, I'm here to do my job. I get paid to do the job. So I'm going to do my job. I'm going to go home. I'm going to get my money. And that's what it is. And I just learned that that works. It works very well for me, especially because it's not like it will go on forever. It's to understand the intent of why a person classified as white is doing that, is to make you uncomfortable, to make you feel stressed, to make you feel all of these things. So don't let it. Do your job. Keep it moving. Eventually, they'll move on from you when they don't get whatever it is that they want from you. Unfortunately, I will admit that I didn't get to hear your entire email and like all the specifics that you said. So I don't know if this is like a boundary stepping kind of thing where you feel like it's a sexual thing or something, in which case I think that you should treat that situation differently because that's a totally different thing. But the very definition of a manager is that's what managers do. That's what supervisors do. They oversee, they supervise, they monitor, micromanage, all of those kinds of things. And so you just might be the pick for the time, but, you know, just do your job and do it very well. And I mean, my advice could be like totally empty, but it has worked for me. I'm in a pharmacy with an individual who is classified as white, who is a extreme micromanager, type A, anal, and just very frustrating personality. And I will tell you that that has been my code and it has worked. My work stands for me. And so, you know, I don't know how long you've been working there, if this is a new situation or any of those types of specifics, but for me it was like, he doesn't know me for a very long time. I started there in October. And so, you know, over time, based off of my work ethic and the work that I do, the way that I treat the patients, the way that I do what I do, what I actually get paid to do, the micromanaging has ceased. And there's a lot less, and it's only he and I, so there's no one else for him to really lord over or, you know, micromanage other than myself, but it's less. So hopefully that helps. But yeah, thank you all for listening.
Indeed, we got the update. This white man is not her direct manager. So if folks want to adjust any of their information or authority, does that change anyone, change anything for any of the folks? Emmy, does that change anything? This is not her direct manager. Doesn't, okay. You would do your work. I don't care if he's there, not going to respond at all.
Because he's probably reporting to the direct manager. white people collude. That's what they do. He doesn't have to be a direct manager to still have way more influence than she would. Just do your job, and he will, in my opinion, you know, move on. But
ignore. You're breaking up a little bit. I think that's B in the six. Yes, you're breaking up a little bit.
Sorry, can you hear me a bit better?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, perfect. I'm sorry. Is it okay if I chime in?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. I would say that, yes, I mean, I do respect what the former caller had mentioned. I would also like to add that it does change it somewhat in that if it's not her direct supervisor, I do understand that staff managers are there to supervise and manage, but if she's feeling very uncomfortable, and especially if it's something of a sexual nature, you know, that she should definitely use her nonverbal cues and her verbal cues to exercise or to express that she is feeling uncomfortable, and that she should definitely document, and that she should definitely, you know, start building a case for herself. And the reason being is that I know in my situation, especially with the white female who was asexual, well, she was homosexual, and she was trying to come on to me, and she was she wasn't my direct supervisor, but she was a supervisor for another department in a company that I used to work for. But it was the documentation that helped. It was showing and informing a couple of other employees who also worked alongside, you know, where I'd say, okay, like I wouldn't say full out, you know, I feel uncomfortable around her, but I'd say, you know, have you noticed this, or have you noticed, like, I'm getting a lot of attention from this particular person? And then they would also be my eyes and ears and ended up becoming my witnesses. Mind you, I ended up having to leave the job because, of course, she lied and, you know, she's white and they chose her words over mine, despite me having witnesses and documentation, what have you. But when I needed to get the employment benefits, it definitely enabled me to get the employment benefits until I got another job. So by all means, regardless, protect yourself. That's my advice to the writer. Sorry if I sounded long-winded.
Did we appreciate that, B? Did we have any other folks who had suggestions? So this is a white man manager, but not her direct manager, where she does not feel comfortable. This person is just kind of loitering in her office work area. Anyone want to recalibrate their suggestion now, knowing this is not her direct manager?
Gus?
Stacey in the UK?
Yeah, I mean, I understood that it wasn't her manager, so I wouldn't change my advice, but it is very situation specific, so it depends. I mean, if it's a job that doesn't, you know, if it's not a job that she intends to stay at for a long time, then, you know, she may handle it one way. But if it's, you know, you have to be careful because there's often agendas, and that's what I was trying to present in terms of my example. But I also would agree with what Emma said in terms of that sometimes, you know, they are working on behalf of other managers anyway, so you really do have to assess that situation. And certainly in my instance, that was the case as well. But the only thing I would probably do differently, because this individual was trying to undermine me, and I guess it was very early on in her warring, is to make sure that I'm remaining in contact with my manager or my head of team, making sure that they are aware of my work and what I'm doing, and not in a confrontational way, not in a way that you're complaining, but don't allow the person with the agenda to just dictate the narrative about you. That may change the situation. It might not. But just realize that there is a game being played. And sometimes, and what my mistake was probably in one way, was to retreat. Maybe I wouldn't have been able to change the agenda anyway, and I probably wouldn't have. I wouldn't go into all the details now. But yeah, so just, I guess it's situation specific, but I understood the context. It wasn't her manager. And as I said, it was useful to me to be able to document and use that evidence years down the line. Now, again, whether the evidence makes a difference is another matter altogether, but at least it does protect you to a degree. I'll meet my line.
Much obliged, Stacey in the UK. Any other suggestions? I think documenting, checking policy and procedure is pretty solid for all situations. Documenting is generally very solid as well. And I am always an advocate of asking questions and in a calm, pleasant manner, asking questions. I think that can be helpful as well. Although I definitely see the logic in what MA said about I'm going to be codified and not resolve. Mirrors. I was thinking that as well, because we've had so many people talking about whites doing this sort of thing where they're just, whether they're looking at you or just even some of them saying whites sneaking up on them. It might be good in this situation to have the mirrors as well, just so that you can kind of increase your field of vision. That might help your comfort level. I think the listener, I think she said she was looking at trying to leave and not having this be a long-term situation. So as long as you're going to be there, I would try and make it as comfortable and secure for yourself as you can. Having mirrors at your desk, or at least a mirror at your desk, that can be something to help out as well, and asking questions. Do we have any other folks that we missed completely? Anybody that we missed totally, didn't get an opportunity to share?
Yeah, have you heard?
Greetings, Ivy.
Greetings, Gus, and greetings to all the callers online. I hope you all can hear me well, because I got disconnected and had to call back in. I'm on the VoIP line. But I wanted to say to Stacey, thank you for your commentary about the race soldier that I'm dealing with. And I want to say that I greatly appreciate the commentary from B and from the Codified software developer, all that they had to share all night. And the little bit that I heard from Emmy got disconnected in the middle of her talking, so I look forward to listening to it again tomorrow, the full recording of it. But shout out to her for what I'm about to say. I wonder for the caller in Wisconsin that works at the courthouse, I believe he said that he got promoted. If he said that, congratulations on that, and I wish you the best on that. And I wonder if it was possible when the race soldier tried to publicly humiliate you by pretending to forget how long you have been working there and just being petty and childish and racist and retaliatory, if it were possible. I don't know who she is to you, so I wonder if it were possible for, when she said that, for you to just not say anything at all. And then I think she just would have, felt stupid. And I wonder if that was possible, what would have happened if you would have done that? And shout out to Emmy for that, for just that brilliant code. Like, it's like my favorite one. And that's all I had on my line. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Gus.
Appreciate that, Ivy. I guess we had a question, the caller in Florida. Did you want to field that one?
Okay. What was the question again?
Let's see if I heard. I guess you can correct me if I get it wrong, Ivy. The question for the caller in Florida, in terms of the white woman who was practicing racism at the ceremony, where she couldn't remember how long you lived there, she said she didn't know what this white woman's relationship to you is, like on the job, but is it possible that you could have just ignored her when she did all this? Like, oh, what's your name again? Is it possible that you could have just not said anything at all?
Well, like my response was, I just said that the truth of it was that I was there for 7 years. So she was listing off like milestones for the employees. And she ran off a list of about five people. And my name was last. And I was standing directly in front of her. Like, this is the personnel manager. And she's in charge of doing interviews and hiring people. So she's an administrative person, like very high level. And she's actually the person that hired me for that job back in 2011. Like, so like for the context, like that's who that person was. And I think it got to this point because we had a black female start in January and they hadn't introduced her in two consecutive meetings. And when it got to March, it was the beginning of March, and she asked if anyone had anything for the good of the order. So I raised my hand and I said, we have a new person. And I said what her name was, and she wasn't introduced last month. So last month, including the month of March, February and March, they hadn't introduced her. And I could tell she wasn't very happy about that. She was upset about that. So from March to now about June, I've noticed she's been doing slight acts of racism, just practicing racism in indirect, slick ways. Like she mentioned about earbuds in case of an active shooting one time. And she mentioned this one about how long had I been working there. And she didn't say that to anyone else. So, like, that's the context of that. And I actually did respond to that question. But I don't know if I couldn't have said nothing at all. I think that was one of those things where it was a question directed at me. But I could have said, well, don't you have the amount of years that I've been working there? But I think she did that to humiliate me and practice racism as though I didn't know how long I've worked there.
Did that answer your question, Ivy?
It did. Thank you. And it doesn't sound like that would have been a viable option, if I'm even using that word correctly. I'm going to have to look that up in a minute. For you to just not say anything, it sounds like that would have been one of those where it would have created new problems. And so, you know, yeah, I'm sorry that you had to go through that. And thank you. I'll move my line.
Indeed. Did we miss anybody? Anybody else have a hand up that has not been able to share at all?
Sure. Is there time for me to share like two little quick vignettes? I commented on someone's question, but I...
Let's hear it.
Okay, really quickly. This is Emmy. I'm out here in the DMV area. I'm in the pharmacy. My part of my code, I think one that will remain solid. And even before I've learned about coding, but I'm making it a code now. Like, I'm giving it that stamp, is to do my best work. I feel like if I do my best and I succeed, it's good, that's great. But if I do my best and I didn't succeed or I didn't do well, then at least I know that I gave it my all, you know, and then I can reassess and go from there. But if I kind of do not give it my best, and then I don't do well, then it makes it harder for me to assess how to have a better outcome. So I do my best across the board, and even at my, you know, job, especially when I'm dealing with other people, and my job entails nothing but dealing with other people in different capacities, whether it's like a patient or an insurance company or whatever it is. So it worked out. I wasn't actually foreseeing this, but I am attempting to volunteer at the free clinic in my area. And so I'm very, 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 very excited about this opportunity. And so I went to the like training, and the leader of the training is a black woman. And she looked kind of familiar, and she looked at me like she kind of knew me. And when it came to introduction, she was like, you look really familiar. And I was like, you do too. But I couldn't place her. She had tons of energy. It was great. I'm very excited. But then, like, in deep inside, I was like, I've probably seen her at the pharmacy. I have.
But what's really great is I'm looking forward to the opportunity when, like, I tell her, yeah, you know, I've probably helped you at the pharmacy, and then she can remember the service I provided and then open up the door so that I can get this experience in a medical field at this free clinic, which I'm super excited to do. So doing your best has multiple rewards. The other thing is I enjoy giving my time to non-white people, even when they annoy me. I don't have the, like, biggest attention span, but I practice patience, especially with my patients or people who come to the pharmacy. Sometimes they like to tell really long stories, and sometimes I'm really busy and I don't really have the time to listen, but I still will for a non-white person or a Black person. I'll listen for as long as I can, and that happened today. And the woman, you know, her husband just had surgery, and she's discombobulated, and she just kept talking. But I was super smiley and very attentive and wished her the best, and if she needed anything, we're here to help her, blah, 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 blah. As we're doing this entire conversing, having this conversation, this older white guy walks up, and he's posturing his body to let me know he is extremely upset with me, frustrated with me for giving this Black woman all this attention. And he has this question, like, he even has something on his phone that he's, like, waving up in the air behind her. She doesn't see him because he's behind her. She's facing me. But I even extend the conversation because I was like, you know what? You tell me all about that. Where he at? He in a car waiting on you? Oh, my God. What'd they pull out? What? Oh, really? You know, everything. And then when he came, she accidentally bumped into him. That's how much she didn't even know someone was behind her, but whatever. So when he got to the counter, he was all red in the face and all frustrated, and he just, like, pushed his phone in my face and asked me if we had some baby products. And I just told him baby stuff is on aisle 16. Put my finger like that and pointed to it, and he was like, ah, ah. So he walks over there, and I was like, yep, make a right right there. Like, I didn't go across the counter, which I usually do to help patients find whatever they're looking for. And or people find whatever it is they're looking for, and we didn't have whatever it was. And he caught at it, like, he looked back and threw his hands up, was like, oh well, try another place. Like, I didn't even care. So, you know, I'm petty. It felt good though. So, anyway, thanks for listening.
That is Emmy. Love it, love it. Black self-respect, and that's, I mean, if you can be in a position, regardless of what you do, where you can, you know, show more empathy to a Black person and a little more time, a little more care, like, that is spectacular. That's, you know, always. And I mean, wow, race soldiers hate that. Like, oh my gosh, it's investing all the time. Congratulations. I know Dr. Welsing would certainly co-sign Mr. Fuller as well on Black people doing our best, particularly in things that are constructive, like, do your best, do your best. That's going to put you on a collision course with racist man and racist woman anyway, because they're not interested in seeing Black people do their best in any area of people activity. So that will automatically put you on the path towards fighting to justice. The person who dialed in last four digits, 7502, did you have commentary that you wanted to share?
Hello?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, sorry if I'm nervous. I was just calling in to pretty much just ask a question about something I'm going through at my job.
That's what we're here for. What's going on?
Yeah, so I brought to my manager's attention that I wasn't comfortable with the seating arrangements. I just told her if I can, you know, sit next to someone who I prefer to sit next to, because she moves us, she sits us somewhere different every month. And I was just letting her know I wasn't comfortable with that. And after that, she told me that I was moving teams to a completely different team after I brought that to her attention. And I'm not comfortable with the team that she moved me to, and I just feel like I'm not really experiencing everything that they do because the team does something completely different from what my job is, you know, at the team that I was on. And I just felt like she moved me because of, you know, me asking her if I could just sit where I want. And I was just wanting to ask you if I, you know, if I did the right thing, or was I supposed to just not say anything?
I certainly, you know, I wouldn't say that you did anything incorrect about that. I don't know enough information about, you know, the situation and, you know, everything that led up to that. And is this a white woman who's in charge of someone classified as white, who's in charge of saying, you know, who told you you're going to be moving to a new team? Was this a white woman?
Yes.
Okay. You know, hey, in the system of white supremacy, whites are sometimes very arbitrary. So it could have been that they had made that decision anyway. It could have been a racist act of retaliation. Talk about petty. Racists are the pettiest in the world, especially when it comes to blacks. It could have been, who is this nigger to come in and ask, you know, where does she want to sit at? That could be the case as well. As I said, I don't have enough information about it to, you know, figure out which one it is, to say whether or not, you know, that was already a made decision, or if that, I mean, did she tell you, like, was it an instantaneous thing? Like, you went and said you weren't comfortable with the seating arrangements, the way they've been going. Is it possible that you could be seated here? And did she say immediately, like, oh, you're going to be going to a new team?
She told me, like, the next day when I came in that I was going to be moving to a different team. And I just really believe it had to do with that, because I wasn't told to move to a different team until that happened.
From my position, I just don't have enough information to know. I mean, it's either way is possible. She could have went home. I might be leaning, particularly if what you're thinking, I would say that you are much more informed, much substantially more informed about the situation than I am. So I would say, hey, if you think that this was like retaliation, that's the sense that you have, that there was no idea that you were going to be going to a new team or anything, that, you know, that's what this was. That's probably what it was. I think a lot of times one of the ways that white supremacy works is that it makes us not trust ourselves, where we're very hesitant about our own judgments and assessments of situations. And a lot of times you are the expert, you know, on the situation. You've been working with these folks and hanging for hours. And I mean, you know, this woman pretty well, I would think, and particularly in terms of how she relates to you. So I would say, yeah, if that's what you think it is, that's probably what it is. That happens very regularly with white people on the job where they, I mean, as I just said, Emmy, you think you're petty? Racists, you have got nothing on them in terms of how petty they can be. Who is this uppity nigger to come in here and ask for a new seat, or, you know, think she is too good to not move around with the rest of the folks that we got in here? We'll move you over to that. Absolutely. They do that sort of thing all the time. If that's what you think it is, that's probably what it is.
Girls, can I say something really quickly?
Yes, ma'am. Stacey.
I was going to just say, I agree with everything you've said. I try to always encourage the callers not to try and internalize or blame yourself for how racists respond to our requests at work, so long as you were doing the right thing. And if there's a situation where you feel uncomfortable, then you should be able to voice that to your managers and them not retaliate in a negative way against you, or retaliate would be negative. That said, she's moved you. You are now in a team, and I think you said you're not comfortable with the work, or you're not familiar with their work. I wouldn't do it in a confrontational way. But I would go back to her and just ask for a conversation around the new work that you're being asked to do, and just try and get some kind of training and support, so that, you know, if they've moved you, then they have to support you, and again encourage you to read your policy and procedure just to understand about how they move people around in your team. And just final thing would be, again, I guess in terms of any learning, maybe for the future, just think about how you raise issues, and it's not your fault, but just knowing that, as Gus said, the slightest thing we do, we will be perceived to be uppity. And I'll mute my line there, Gus.
Training, real, real important. That I would definitely, as opposed to addressing you not being comfortable in a new team, I would ask for training, because I think training would help you be comfortable, or certainly more comfortable, so that you can be really competent in wherever you are at the new position. Because whites, they are phenomenal. That normally is a big part of the retaliation. They will put non-white people in positions and give us inadequate training or no training, or be real, just trashy in the way that the training is conducted, where the end result is that you have not been trained. And that ends up being very uncomfortable for the job. I mean, how can you do your job if you haven't been trained? And then they can come in when it's performance review time, raise time, promotion time. Oh, man, look at your numbers. These are terrible. And you're holding down the team. In fact, I don't even know if we can keep you around. And it's, you were never trained to be able to adequately perform your job. So I would big time training.
Yeah, I definitely wanted to suggest or tell her that I need training, but I just really didn't feel comfortable working there after that. I just feel more comfortable just looking for something else. But I was just mainly wanting to know if I made the right decision or not, or how to address something that you're not comfortable with.
I think with asking, if you're talking about if you made the right decision in terms of asking about the seating, is that what you're talking about? Did you make the right receding in terms of requesting to not be moved?
Yeah, I don't know if I was just supposed to, you know, just sit wherever she told me to sit and just be okay with it, or...
No, I
just kind of been, I don't know, kind of blaming myself in a way, like, you know, maybe I should have never said anything.
No, I don't think there's anything incorrect about it. I've seen, man, whites ask for all kinds of alarming things on the job or any other circumstance, or asking to not be moved, or just a seating request. I don't think that's, you know, anything that you should be blaming yourself or feeling bad. As a racist are super arbitrary. She could have done this anyway. And I've seen racists do far worse for far less things. So, no, I don't think you did anything incorrect. I don't think you should be blaming yourself. As consistently, I think, as stated on this broadcast, Mr. Fuller says, the people that are most to blame for your situation, all of our problems, racist man, racist woman, racist child. I do think that's a good echoing, a little echoing. I do think it's a good, if we're no speakerphone, that would be helpful. No speakerphone. But I do think it's helpful what Stacy said about just, we can always refine the way that we go about, you know, making our requests. Like, we're always trying to examine our code and look at ways that we can upgrade, do things better. That might be the case, but if your ultimate sense is that this environment on the whole is one that's not going to be wholesome for you, and you think there's a better environment for you, then definitely update that LinkedIn page, update your LinkedIn page, update your resume, get cracking, looking for openings immediately. If this is not a healthy environment for you, and it sounds like, you know, you don't sound very enthusiastic about this environment, I'll put it that way. If that's the case, and if it's having an impact on your health, if you're feeling depressed about this, you said you're blaming yourself. If it's not going to be a healthy fit for you, update and move on. Don't allow yourself to get mired where you end up stuck in this environment for a long time, and you know it's something that's not healthy and something where you feel like you need to move on. But I would just say, try to be decisive, and try, again, going back to kind of what I said before, I think one of the big results of the system of white supremacy is where it really erodes our confidence, where we don't trust our own judgment, and we end up not being decisive about things. Trust yourself about this environment. Trust that you have your brain computer is working and you are accurately assessing things that are happening around you, including if this is an environment that you need to remain in, if that makes sense.
Thank you.
For sure.
I just had one other comment. Noticed there was this black male that was my coworker who was sitting next to me, and we used to just talk sometimes, but I noticed that she moved him to a different team as well. I'm not sure why he moved as well, but I'm not sure if that had anything to do with me and him talking on the job, you know, while we're doing our work at the same time. But it just seems like, I don't know, it just seems like she had something. I just believe like her moving him and me like had something to do with that. I'm not sure.
It could have been planned. That's why I said before, you know, all of this could have been planned months before you even thought about asking about your seat problem, or I won't even say it that way, about your seating arrangement. I think someone had talked about that previously. Whites do not want to see black people getting along well on the job. That sort of thing sticks out. So that alone could have been grounds. And they say, oh, yeah, we're going to make sure that we, you know, break that up immediately. So that's why I said, you know, it's no need to blame yourself about, you know, any of this. The folks that are most to blame are whites. All of this could have happened anyway, even if you never asked for the seat to begin with. So that's just further evidence of the tackiness of this, you know, whole arrangement, and maybe even just another signal that this is not the place that you want to be hanging out in for too much longer.
Yes, thank you.
For sure.
It's not somewhere I want to be.
Context of white supremacy, not someplace I want to be either. That will wrap us for the broadcast. We will be here tomorrow. Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man. Favorite book all time, Gus T. Renegade. 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, part 6. We are not quite halfway through the book, but we have made remarkable progress. I'm very surprised. I thought it would take longer. Maybe it's just because I've enjoyed the read, but wowee. I think we're right after the explosion at the paint factory. The great Lucius Brockway. I did email Dr. Kevorkian and he gave updates, his thoughts on the significance of the name Lucius Brockway, and why the substance added to the optic white paint is called dope. The black substance is called dope. He answered both of those questions. We'll share tomorrow. In fact, the BBC, they had an article yesterday that was published where they were talking about how Ellison's book is so relevant to what's happening now and an assessment of white supremacy, racism. I posted it on my Facebook page. As a matter of fact, I knew it was about Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man. I didn't even see what a reference to the article. All I saw was the image. It was an image of a black male below a bunch of light bulbs. And I said, oh, that's Invisible Man. And I clicked on it. And it was the only drama that I had was this published today? It was not. It was published yesterday, June 6th. But Invisible Man, wowee. Favorite book all time by Gus T. We'll do the compensatory call-in on Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll catch up on what's gone down last 7 days. Looking forward to checking in with folks. With that, thanks everyone for tuning in. Hope it was a constructive investment of your Thursday evening. Much obliged if you're listening live or archives. Again, I know it's summertime. The program is ending. The sun is still bright and shiny here in Seattle. It's a little after 8 p.m. Beautiful. It looks like it could still be middle of the daytime. If you are frolicking and enjoying all of this summer-like weather, sobriety would still be best. Racists do not take a vacation just because the weather is a little bit nicer. I think Dr. Welsing, Dr. Cambon, Minister Malcolm, many of the folks that we esteem, they would strongly encourage that we do everything we can to preserve our brain computers and health by being sober. So that we can crank out solutions to the problem. Racist man, racist woman, racist child. Certainly, if you're going to be out and about, you want to be sober and buckled up, driver or passenger. Let's do everything that we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. That said, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another Black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, your brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.